Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Carolla Classics is brought to you by LifeLock. It's sad that cyber criminals are taking advantage of the coronavirus pandemic. They've sent malware to scam people trying to learn about cures for the disease. They've conducted phishing attacks and devised counterfeit online pharmacies. And they've also focused on the economic stimulus by creating fake banking websites. Okay, this is important, and it's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet, but that's why we have LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web, and if they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they send you an alert. If you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help you restore your identity easier than what you can do on your own. Check out LifeLock, right, Gio?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for July 25th, 2020. The show, we're going to highlight some of the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. My name's Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, superfan Giovanni.
Ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy, Gio.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I want to remind everybody, Geico is now offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. Visit geico.com for more. We got a great show coming up.
I'm excited about my new RV policy.
You should be, and we'll get more into that in a moment. Let's get going with our first clip. I'm excited for this one. This one is from 2012, and it features Lake Bell guesting. I know her best from the movie she did called In a World. She wrote, directed, starred in that one. What do you remember from, Gio?
Well, that as well as Children's Hospital. Cordry was on early to promote that when it was just moving to Adult Swim. Came out to the first Park West shows. This is her first appearance on ACS, but previously to this, she was actually on another show I think you work on.
That's right.
Car something?
Yep, she was a guest on CarCast before the Carolla Show. She loves cars and...
I think Goldberg is the only other person that happened with, and they like crushed an episode of CarCast, and then for years I'm like, you gotta get him on ACS, man.
Yeah.
Lake Bell was much quicker, but yeah. That Goldberg episode, and now Goldberg co-hosts the second episode of CarCast.
That's completely right. Yeah, every Wednesday with Matt D'Andrea. Check out CarCast. Two episodes a week now, one hosted by Goldberg. But we digress.
I'm awesome.
You are awesome. Lake Bell on the Adam Carolla Show, 2012.
She's also awesome. She was hilarious. It's a really fun episode. It's back during the Allison era, 2012, October 14th, aired the following day. Adam Carolla Show, 9:33. Lake Bell, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop. Check it out.
Yeah, welcome back. Lake Bell, Lake, we've had in the studio talking about cars. Now we're going to talk a little Children's Hospital. Good to see you, Lake.
Good to see you.
Nice.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me back.
I love the fact that you're a gearhead. And by the way, I should tell everyone website if you want to check out Children's Hospital, adultswim.com/Children's Hospital. And you can tweet her at Lake Bell. What is your automotive history, Lake?
Well, I can't take credit for it just as like, and that's not just my interest because of nothing. It was because my dad, Harvey Siegel, owns race car tracks, and he was an amateur racer his whole life. He was a collector. I mean, it was always, you know, he threw me in crazy cars. We had a Ford GT40 in the parking, like in our garage that he never touched and we could never like breathe near. But
yeah.
But
he doesn't own that car anymore?
No.
No.
Just recently. But that's the thing. It's like,
oh, just recently. Oh,
yeah.
Good. So he made money.
Yeah, he made money. But I think it's also like,
like $2 million?
I mean, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, like $2 million.
But I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a lot. Yeah.
A lot. But he had a lot of car. He had a lot of like Shelby Cobras and he had. Yeah. He was like a Ford dude. And
yeah.
Then VIR came up. It was a historic track. 1974 is when it sort of went.
Virginia International Raceway?
Yeah, VIR. And it was closed down, grown over. Dad bought it. But he bought it because it's a Matt Damon movie, isn't it?
I know. Dad bought a racetrack. How does it go with mom? Like, I want to buy a racetrack sounds really, like, in the...
Selfish?
Well, I like, buying a boat is a tough sell, like, for a wife. But buying a racetrack, that seems like a really tall order.
Well, wait a minute, because he's a real estate developer. So it made sense. You know, he was an amateur racer. He was a collector. It was a good amalgamation of those two ideas.
Right.
You know? So it made sense. And... It's a beautiful, I mean, VIR, I don't know if you've been there, but it's beautiful.
No, I've seen it.
It's like a space of land that is regal.
You know, there's something very visceral about putting a kid in a car and just punching it and having that feeling of being pinned up against the back of the seat. It used to be a lot more dangerous. I mean, doing it when your dad's Cobras. But still, that's a memory that stays with a young gal.
It is. And, you know, I remember both times that my stepmother was pregnant, we were – I feel like he planned this. We were in New Jersey at our – we have a little farmhouse in Jersey. And both times when she was going into labor, we were there. So it meant that Dad's like, I guess we're going to have to get in the car and drive like maniacs into New York.
Yeah.
Both times. She was like, like, I remember the whole, like, Lamont, terrifying for a kid. You're like, oh, my God, this woman's dying. And Dad was driving, like police escort, getting pulled over. We got a flat tire one time because he was going so hard.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you know, was like, Dad, why are you driving
What
on
was
the
he
shoulder?
Driving? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was, I can't remember the earliest one because I was really young, but the second one was a Range Rover. And he was like one of the first dudes who had a Range Rover in the city. It was really – it was like when they first came.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. It got stolen like right away, by the way. We had cars stolen all the time, like 80s, you know, New York City.
It's weird because I feel like cars used to get stolen a lot. Hubcaps would get stolen a lot. Rims would get stolen a lot. Yeah. Stereos would get stolen a lot. They would take seats out of cars. Like, they would do a lot of that.
Wasn't there a thing where people take hood ornaments, too? Like the Mercedes-Benz hood ornaments?
Oh, yeah. Hood ornaments.
But what do you do with that? Like, what
the Beastie Boys, just put them around your neck.
Yeah.
Just like the whole – but not – I mean, I understand like a Mercedes
And the rest
one.
Of the Jews. Right. Not just the Beastie Boys. Right. Let's not forget the rest
the
of the
thing.
Jews.
Oh,
yeah.
Jews.
And now obviously the Rolls Royce has the one that dips down into the grill. Have you seen that? Actually hit a button and it just disappears.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I've not seen that.
It goes...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They Beastie Boy. They Jew-proofed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Occasional Schwarze. Occasional. So, sorry, where were we? Children's Hospital. Yes.
We were giving birth in Range Rovers.
Right.
But Children's Hospital
so
is close to that.
So both of them were born in the hospital, though?
They both were. We did stop in... I remember we got a flat tire and I remember Dad driving on the shoulder erratically. And I was like, what... You know, it's like he's driving on the shoulder. He's like, no, that's my lane. Like that was
that's
like
his lane.
Yeah, he was like, that's the lane that's for me. I always thought that I was like the shoulder is Harvey Seals.
So how do you get into acting from this crazy background?
I think because it was my parents were divorced. There was, you know, like the divorce, and I'd be like, hey, laugh at this.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me laughing at this. You know.
Sure.
And then it would be a source of like trying to make everyone laugh or not think or just procrastinating to go to bed. It was just I always wanted to be an actor since I was a kid, but. The driving thing, I didn't know I was a car enthusiast until later in life.
How's the Hollywood Reporter test drive thing working out for you? How often do you do that?
I do it like – I mean it's pretty good. I'd say I do every 2 months.
They
every month.
Give you a car, you drive it around,
yeah.
And write a column on it?
Yeah. You write it, you know, anecdotal kind of fun thing. You know, it's not like I'm a actual car – you know, car reporter. It's I speak to the experience and – you know, how it sort of plays into my life. But it's not like, you know, I mean, I've learned more about the sort of innards of cars and performance of cars from that.
It's
from doing
weird,
it.
Though, for the company, because the company gives you a free car to drive around for 2 weeks and then possibly you talk shit about it, right?
Possibly. But that is, I mean, isn't that you that, I mean, that's the name of the game, right?
I guess so, but it is kind of, you know, they give you 55, 65, 70 grand worth of car. You go out and flog it for a couple of weeks.
I know.
Put a little ding in the door and then you go, not my cup of tea.
The ergonomics are a little off.
Yeah, I'm excited. I got a supercharged Jag that... Matt DeAndrea got me over there. All right. Shall we do a little news?
Yeah.
What should we do? I don't know. I got this car thing that's bothering me, but I can get to that. I don't know.
Well, no, now I got to know.
Yeah, now we're peaked.
Well, You guys have heard me say a whole bunch of times that you never know how off the media is until they start talking about you. I mean, it's not just how they don't spell your name correctly, but when they tell a story about how you met so-and-so or how you got into the business or where you've got your first break or whatever, it's almost always wrong. Mm-hmm. And I grew up just thinking, well, if it was on TV or it was in a newspaper and they were just sort of showing it, well, then that's what it was. I had no idea how inaccurate most stuff was. And I got an email a couple of days ago. I did the Monterey Historic, the Rolex Historic races a few months ago. And I got an email from a guy named Dave Stone, who's just one of the track guys, one of the guys I see out there all the time. He drives a Z car. And I had a Z car, too. And he said, hey, just saw the Monterey Historics on Speed. Thanks for making me look cool. Ha, ha, ha. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know, like, what was it? I hadn't seen it. I didn't know it was on. So I went and TiVo'd the Monterey Historics. And I have a little 30-second clip. You can see this guy is the head of BMW. You can go to adamcarolla.com and take a look at it if you like. The guy's the head of BMW North American sales or whatever, and he's driving some historic in the background as a CSL 3.0 Batmobile, as they call it. So that's my race.
On this course, Bob, and they tell you, aim for a certain tree.
That's me in the red car ahead of this guy.
And there
is Ludwig Willisch. But listen what they call me.
CSL picking up a position here in the race for cars from 1973 to 83 in IMSA.
Battling David Stone and an ex-Bob Sharp Datsun, later driven by Elliot Forbes Robinson, who cuts right across his bow.
With except a long championship pedigree in SECA racing.
Except for it's Adam Carolla in 280ZX that was driven by Jim Fitzgerald. But, all right, that's one thing. Now let's see who wins the race.
Rare mid-engine racer.
Let's see who wins the race.
I'm going to watch to see who wins the race.
Let's see who wins the race.
Datsuns,
Porsches, BMWs, and there's an ex-Craig Carter Chevy Camaro as they head up the hill.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, who wins it?
In the end, Dennis Singleton in his 74 Porsche RSR in green takes the checkered flag in first.
All right, took the checkered flag in first, but wait a minute. I have the official results here. Dennis Singleton came in 13th place, everybody.
Wait, what?
And the guy who passed him, Bruce Kenapa, was lapping him. That white car that was passing him?
Yeah, yeah.
That car's lapping him. That car came in third place. So the car that they said won the race, who just got lapped by the white car, is came in 13th place. It did not come in first place. It came in 13th place. And he was being lapped. We're watching him being lapped right now. What else could this be?
For those of you who know, is this like when they do poker on TV where the commentators are doing it after the fact? After the fact?
I think so. But why? Okay, you have a shot of a green car going across the finish line. Can you just go? The guy who won the car, the guy who won the race all out, was in a Ford Mustang, and then a guy in a 935 Porsche and another 935 Porsche. That's the one who wrapped. And then a whole bunch of 935 Porsches and then a whole bunch of other stuff. And then that guy, Dennis, came in 13th place. Why? But here's the thing. Like, if I was just watching, I'd just be watching going, oh, the guy won the race. Yeah. I just happen to be there and have the grid sheet, and I know who won the race.
Who is number one? So it's totally wrong. They were just asleep at the wheel.
Not only
pun intended.
Is it, not only did you kind of lie, but you actually showed the guy getting lapped.
Yeah, you showed a car
ahead of him. The white car just,
passing him, and that guy was Bruce Kenapa, and he came in third place. It's really weird, right? So now it makes you wonder.
Straight up.
I got all kinds of questions about all kinds of TV shows, starting with the Banana Splits, going way back to the 70s. Like, but then you just go, how fucking lazy are television producers? Like, and if you're the guy who actually won the race,
you're like, hi.
Hello, I lapped that guy. Like, what?
And if you care enough about this to report it,
why not
actually Google it?
I have no fucking idea. I have
the
official race results, and they give them to you. They give them on every race. And by the way, why not get my name right? It was pretty easy to get my car and my number figured out, too.
What did they call you?
Dave Stone.
Dave Stone.
I argue it's a cooler story to have the Man Show guy in there with the BMW guy.
It's a cooler name.
Dave Stone is. Yeah, you don't mess with Dave Stone. All right. By the way, this Friday, Wyclef Jean on the show. Mm. Jeff Lynn from ELO, Danica Patrick, and Joel McHale, Graham Parker. Look out, world.
Jesus
Christ.
You are the dumbest person alive. What is wrong with you?
I think that's Joel McHale. All right. Shall we do a little news in a lake you hang out in Crackwise like you do?
All right,
you got it, Dave Stone.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison. Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cunt. It's Allison. Allison.
The next presidential debate is Tuesday. It will be at Hofstra University, and it will be town hall style, moderated by Candy Crowley. I don't like how they keep changing the style. It makes me feel like this whole thing is a reality show. They should have a scavenger hunt for the final one.
Yeah. I don't like the idea that they schedule it. I just want it to be impromptu.
Bang.
I don't like all the prep.
Yeah. Mm.
What kind of debate is it if you're going to prep? You know what I mean?
Remember, speech.
Yeah, it'd be like if you went and saw an improv troupe and they go, all right, give us an occupation. And they're like, heavy equipment operator. All right, now relationship. Father and son. All right, we'll be back in an hour. I don't need that. You can dance, monkey. I want it right now.
That's what you say to your future
words, but
Yeah. Yeah, you know what
maybe,
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Now, did anyone watch the vice presidential debate?
Yes.
I was on stage in Cleveland, so I did not.
Have you seen clips of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it?
I
kept hearing it was a tie. That's all I heard.
I was surprised, actually, that it was called a tie, because I thought that Biden just
nailed
smushed
it.
Him.
I am with you. I felt fully...
He was such a smug dick. I personally enjoyed it. It was a much more enjoyable debate than the first one, which I thought was pretty dry.
What I heard, all I heard was it was a tie, and then I heard Biden was aggressive. That's what I heard.
Very.
And then I heard maybe like a little too much, like maybe it was... bordered on rude, but I don't know.
It was very rude. But like I said, I enjoyed it. But I mean, he was laughing the entire time. He kept grabbing the spotlight from Ryan.
I did feel like it's a debate, though. It is naturally and inherently something where you're supposed to fucking argue. You get into it and make your point. And I felt like Biden was absolutely doing that. I mean, he came in. I felt totally secure with mm-hmm. everything he was saying. He was like – he was all – basically –
he was everything Obama wasn't.
Right. But how much of it
– he was a little bit listen kid, which I think is what the negative – you know, it's like he didn't say listen kid.
It felt maybe like there was some compensation for Obama?
I think that my theory is that this actually is a strategy – and that Obama was pulling his punches on the first debate, and that as it goes, he'll do better and better, and then all of a sudden, you know, people's memories are so short. I think that's what they're hoping, that Mitt will be all confident from his victory in the first one, and that it'll, you know, like that, maybe that won't sustain. We'll see. I just all of a sudden I was like, maybe it makes sense that he wouldn't shoot his wad on the first one.
The way. You know, your psyche works is, you know, if it's a diving competition and you do your first dive and you get threes and fours, and then your next dive is 2 weeks later and you get a seven and an eight, and then they vote on who makes the Olympic team.
Yeah.
They always just go off the last one.
True.
Like, they don't really remember the first one. So
you're only as good as your last picture.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
Hey, kid.
That's right, Dippy.
Welcome to Hollywood.
You'd be better off doing two bad debates and one good one if the first two were bad. If someone said, would you like two good debates and one bad, but the wrong order, or one good debate and two bad, I'd go get the two out of the way, finish with the big one, and then let people vote.
I completely agree with that. I don't know if it was strategic, but I think it's a total.
You're right, kid. Now freshen up my highball, would you, Tuts?
Tell drink of water like
do
myself.
Do you think Romney will slow down with the prep or with how? Like, I guess I'm just wondering, do you think that in essence it might sort of psych him out a little bit, that maybe he feels like he doesn't have to bring it as hard because Obama's not doing as well?
I think Romney has one speed, and that's sober Wes Welker, undersized possession receiver in the NFL, Like, I just think that guy has one speed. I think he's always had one speed. I just think that guy doesn't have a crack a beer and put your feet up. You know, let's go down to the patio and have a drag off a cool and just fucking take a chill pill. Like, I don't think that guy has that speed.
Yeah.
I think he has that motor. I bring up like Wes Welker, undersized wideout in the NFL, which is you're a wideout, you're 5'9 and a half, you don't have blazing speed, and you're going to have to work your fucking ass off. And what ends up happening is you end up leading the league in receptions because you've overcompensated so much for your lack of, you know, vertical ability and your lack of just God-given ability. I don't think Mitt has a chill mode or a day off mode. I think he's like one of those A students where everything is I'm going to attack it, I'm going to prep, and I'm going to attack some more. And I don't think he feels comfortable unless he's prep the shit out of everything.
I also just feel like if you're in a plane that's going down, you're like, oh shit. It's like the last thing you want to do is be like, you know what, let's switch pilots really quick. A guy who hasn't done it as much, but like, you know, he seems like he can recite and say things really well. Like, I just feel like in general, both the like Obama and Biden have their sleeves rolled up. They're like in there. I feel like Biden's performance was so just like, listen,
Toofy,
let me just explain. So like, this is the situation. Like, I understand you're saying all these facts, kid, but it doesn't add up. And just here it is. Like, it was a little much, I think, for America. But
I wish it was weird. What happened was, I wanted to go back. Well, two things went wrong. One is I was on stage in Cleveland, and then when I was walking through the hotel going back to my room that night, I was like, I'm going to catch this debate or the replay or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, it's like, what? Steelers down on to the Titans by 2 points. I was on the bar at the hotel, and then all of a sudden, because I'm ugly American, I decided, oh, I got to watch the end of the Steelers game. And then I just kept hearing from everyone it was a tie. And once you hear it's a tie,
surprised.
I was like, sir, well, it was a tie
was
with,
being called that
with
way.
Biden
I
being aggressive. Well. That's what I was hearing. I was hearing on both CNN, Fox, everyone's just saying it was a tie. Biden was aggressive and it's a tie. And then once you hear it's a tie, then it's like, oh, what do I need to what do I need to catch up on?
I watched the commentary before I watched the actual debates, and I thought that was really interesting because everything was all tie all the time. And then I saw it, and I was like, Biden totally won.
Vice presidential debate. Like, since when did we give a shit? And I keep stopping myself and saying, wait a minute. Is this bigger than usual, or am I older than usual?
I think it's older
than usual.
I feel older.
Why can't it be both?
You mean specifically the vice presidential debate?
Well,
there's
the
more
whole
talk
thing,
about this
first
one.
Off, the whole thing in general is just, you know, presidential debates weren't the end-all and be-all, especially for, you know, hipster Hollywood types like ourselves, number one. The beautiful people.
Right, yeah.
And
we have
two,
other concerns.
Vice presidential debates?
What?
Like,
what are we doing?
It was
kind of amusing and electrifying, and Biden called something, you know, everything Ryan was saying malarkey, and I think there's a lot.
Malarkey.
It was
like
a lot
malarkey.
Of talk about it because it was entertaining.
Yeah.
No, but leading into it, no one...
He's saying there's a lot. I mean,
When did we give a shit about a vice presidential debate before it happened?
Yeah, post...
I mean,
never.
No. So the question is are we getting old and all of a sudden caring, or is it just actually happening and we're just an average citizen? You know, I keep wondering. Like, I have to go find a 23-year-old, but you really have to find yourself at 23 and go.
Which is hard.
Yeah.
Where would you find 23-year-old you?
I'd go about 3 miles west of here to an apartment in off of Laurel Canyon in North Hollywood.
Hey, everybody! What? Me! Jeez, look at my hair! What the hell was I thinking? Yeah. No, that's not acid wash. That's called stone wash. Jade, stage four, Jade. Wow. Yeah.
God, there was a difference between acid wash and stone wash.
Yeah.
And there was so many different rinses and
that's
washes.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. What's next?
Also in political news, Arlen Specter died. Mm. He's famous for the Wall of Sound.
that's
not
Phil.
Really.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He had been in the Senate for 30 years, longest of anyone from Pennsylvania. He died after a long battle with cancer. He was 82. He longtime Republican switched to a Democrat
at
the very end.
That guy.
Pissed off everyone on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been on the Warren Commission.
Wow. Wow, that is, we were just out there. Where, it's weird because if you've been to the spot where Kennedy was shot, it's you got the old grassy knoll and the whole thing, and it's just as it was. Like, it's not new or anything. The book depository is still there and everything. And the two X's just on the ground in the middle of the highway where the bullets were fired.
What?
I mean, literal X. Like, at first, I looked at it and I thought, what is that? No, that can't be. And yeah, there's an X, and then there's another X like 22 feet down the road. And by the way, it's very busy. Like it's a thoroughfare. There's cars just blowing past like all the time.
Ew.
Like you couldn't cross the street there. And it's just weird. It gives you this weird life goes on thing. Like,
yeah.
Here's the place where Kennedy was assassinated, and all it is hey, I'm late for work, man. Just people just blowing
people
by
just
and
being angry.
Geo Metro is just buzzing by, like not even there's a shot of it, and
God.
There's the X, and
how bizarre.
And there's always a cottage industry that springs up over at any time anyone of any notoriety dies. And when I say cottage, I don't mean cottage cheese, but I mean black guys standing around trying to sell you shit. And it's just a bunch of brothers like explaining about the conspiracy. And it's like, you have no ammunition, you know, pardon the pun, but you know, the conspiracy theorists, 90% of their rap is you have no rap. There's not,
yeah, it's impossible to argue with totally insane.
Right. Like, you know the muzzle speed of a 30-06? Yeah. You're like, yes, I do. No, it's like, no.
They bum rush you with info.
Yeah, yeah. They go, it's a 44 caliber shell. It'll cover, 700 meters in 2 seconds. The car was traveling at 41 miles an hour. It's like, all right, I got nothing for you. I got nothing.
I couldn't even follow that.
Yeah, you can't, you don't jump up and go, aha. Let me tell you about muzzle velocity.
That's an interesting observation that, like, a presidential assassination took place in this spot. A president was killed, and I'm on my way to work. I'm late for work, so honk, 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 whatever people kind of forget about. Do you think the same thing will happen someday with the World Trade Center sites, where the ground zero is, like, the greatest, disaster on American soil? I'm late for work.
Well,
it's so big.
Someday.
It'll.
You're right.
It will be bigger someday.
Well, it'll be built and whatever.
It'll
but
be a little different.
But what I mean is I just, last night I was walking through the streets of Philadelphia and thinking about Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, of course.
And I was just walking past these old colonial places with, there's William Penn and all these statues and all these guys with their three-cornered hats and plaques out in front. It's very historical, obviously, in the downtown and stuff like that. He just walked past it. It's like, there's some bum sitting there wiping his ass. It's, trying to bum change and stuff as you walk past it and stuff. And you're like, you do slow down for a beat and go, this thing was built in 1861 and
absolutely.
So on and so on. But you don't stop. You just slow down and look. And then you start thinking about what's on TV up in your room. And that's
sometimes
that's
it
how
makes
we
me
are.
Almost uncomfortably pensive and I have to shake it off.
But it's good because that's progress.
I think if you
go to
poetic.
The Middle East, maybe they stop and look at the monument a little too long.
A little too much.
Yeah, spend a little too much time.
Yeah, keep walking.
Praying or hitting them, flogging
get
themselves against a wall or something. You know what I mean? Like, we're very like, huh? Grandma, grandpa? Yeah, they're dead. Moving on. We're kind of that way. It's progressive.
Are you
it's
saying
good.
That we will forget, even though we never forget?
And we'll be forgotten.
Well, I can tell you that the intersection is just a busy intersection in Dallas. Like, there's there's no tears being shed. And the memorial looks like bad 60s. I mean, the memorial looks, unfortunately, like very 60s. You know what year he's killed by the architecture of the memorial. And the memorial is some sort of weird cop-out thing. It just looks like a bathroom. Like airport bathroom stalls where they're like just like four slab walls like off the ground a little bit. And it's like it doesn't you want a statue of Kennedy or something. There's the memorial, by the way, looking again like Very 60s.
Very
60s.
Don Draper.
Fondly was moved.
It does not.
Matt Fondly was moved. Yeah. Single tear down.
Matt's like, I got to shit that place up.
Yeah, it's not
That's
emotional.
The Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Yeah. First off, it doesn't feel like anyone died. It just feels like this is where the founder of IKEA came up with his first entertainment unit.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It just looks like some big IKEA. It looks like something you'd put
a
together
plug.
With a fucking Allen wrench.
It's like a plug.
And it doesn't smack of anything. And look, let me just say this about art. You're not allowed to explain to me what it means. You know what I mean? Like the opening on one side represents the light and the openness of the heart.
Right.
The darkness in the corner represents what man can do. No, no, no. If I ain't reading it, if I'm just walking through it going, what the fuck is this? It's a cinder block piece of shit. You job not done.
You know what I see beyond those slats? Decaying teeth on a screen.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, I heard
that's
about
what, that's exactly what it was.
Dental town, right?
So then, yeah. Then we went and just walked through this thing, and I had to pay off. I wonder how much of this is. I wonder how many millions of dollars are paid to the nut jobs in hush money. Meaning, hey, crazy 56-year-old black guy who's got the laminated newspaper from back in the day with the arrows on it, and he's yelling at me, and he wants me to take a tour, and he wants $20 to consume an hour and a half of my time. I'm giving you $5 to leave me alone right now. It's a weird, it's a weird mob thing. Like, it'd be a shame if anything happened to that new storefront of yours, wouldn't it? It's like, it's really like you're just paying, it's a protection racket. Like, 50-something-year-old crazy black man, I don't want to have to stand on this corner and hear your crazy words. I don't want to buy into this. I also understand if I stand here, it's not going to stop. So, but there is an unspoken, here's $5. We're kind of running late. Thanks for the information. And that's just to kind of, I wonder if most of these guys' business is $5 go away money.
Wow. And are they really as crazy as they seem, or are they just trying to freak you out to make
to
them
get that $5?
Yeah.
I don't know, but there is a little cottage industry.
Again, not cheese.
Down there.
Again, not
cheese. Yeah.
It's a bummer.
There's a black cottage cheese industry of guys on those corners that just hang out with the whole conspiracy thing. I don't know.
Their worst nightmare is someone saying, yeah, I will have a tour, actually.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'll take 2 hours of your
shit.
Time. Thank you.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's excited to see them?
Not their mom.
Nobody. All right.
Well, if I ever get really famous and then die, I'd like to request a non-trendy memorial.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Let me write that down.
Yes. And again, just something out of bronze. You on a horse, the horse
that
rearing back.
That sounds like me.
You know what I mean?
A gun.
Sword up, leading your troops. Something very timeless. This thing is like 65, 66. Yeah. What year was that? Yeah.
It's Allison holding her iPhone, sending a call to voicemail.
That's right. No, you know what? With an earpiece in, because there will be a lot of kids that come around.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has announced the Apprentice All-Stars cast.
Mm.
Didn't he do that?
I thought I saw that.
That happened, didn't it? We're doing another one of those?
Don't shit on her point, Belle.
No, well, what is
I
it?
Thought this is the first.
Why are we doing the news?
We did the celebrity
All-Stars.
They did the celebrity dancing with the stars.
Yeah, no, this is Apprentice All-Star, mm-hmm. Celebrity mm-hmm. Apprentice. I mean, unless I'm wrong, but I think this is the first.
Oh, here we go.
The first one of those. So here are the All-Stars who will be in this season.
Kind of mm-hmm.
And it starts shooting Monday, and it'll premiere in March. Country music star Trace Adkins,
mm-hmm.
actor Stephen Baldwin, Gary Busey, I feel like I don't even need to say what he is,
right. Penn
Jillette, Lil Jon, Dennis Rodman, Dee Snider, Mary Lou Henner.
Wow.
We were just, you and Lisa Lampanelli and I was eavesdropping, we're just talking about her.
Yes.
How she has like a super brain.
She has
she
a crazy memory.
Anything.
Yeah. Just like my buddy Bob Petrell has the exact same thing. And they're both interviewed like on 60 Minutes. They'll tell you any date, any birthday.
Really?
Anything. You...
She's
you
gonna win.
You give the day your dad bought the Virginia International Raceway. You give the date. He'll tell you what day it was.
Wow!
And it takes him about 15 seconds to tell you what day. Anything? Yep. Tell you what day. That's exactly how they work.
LaToya, Claudia
boy.
Jordan.
Okay,
she's a TV personality and actress. I'm not familiar. Mm-hmm.
I think she's one of the Howie Mandel suitcase girls.
Oh,
I think.
Omarosa, Lisa Rinna, Randy Roderick, and Brett Michaels.
I'm tired just looking at it.
Yeah.
By the way, we're looking at the picture, and Dee Snider's doing the rock and roll thing. At what point? At what point? At what point? Your 60th birthday? Like, at what
do you
point?
What?
Point? Like,
do you retire it?
I'm just saying, like, Dee is the, and I did it with Dee, and I like Dee. He's a nice guy in the world, but we get it. We get it.
You did.
Yeah.
Right.
Once, like, does your, like, let's say your prostate explodes.
Right.
Do you still have the two fingers up? Like,
well,
what?
Like, who else is doing it on the right?
Stop with the,
Michael's
sneaking one
Michael.
In there.
Right.
It's like Dennis Rodman's in, like, a fake shot for, like, a free throw.
And yeah. How come, I don't know.
Gary Busey's looking off.
Maybe just. Maybe
he's on a motorcycle.
That's.
Falling
it just
off.
Feels
that's
like it to me, but has anyone who's ever really rocked ever done that?
I don't think
you ever
so.
Seen, did Jimi Hendrix throwing that? I mean, not, unless you're fucking
Jim
around.
Morrison.
Like I will bet that, you know, Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters have done it for fun. But not
ironically.
Ironically, but not in a I must do this every time
like
a flashbulb comes out. Yes. All right. Anyway, we wish them all well. Penn Jillette back again.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be crazy, man.
Yeah.
Listen, it's going to be fun. These guys are fun, and they're going to argue, and they're going to cry, and it's
like
going to be
show.
Great.
I like
yeah.
the show.
And
mm-hmm.
Also in entertainment news, Dane Cook's mid-season comedy, Next Caller, has been canceled before it premiered.
Wait, what?
Oh.
Dane Cook had an NBC comedy, which was called Next Caller, and it was about a satellite radio TV host. Let's see. It starred him as a misogynistic satellite radio DJ.
Oh.
Sorry, I said TV host. That made no mm-hmm. sense. And his co-host was a feminist NPR commentator.
What?
But Jeffrey Tambor was the
boss. Those
two
never get along.
Ding dong.
I know. But alas, NBC said, I guess the first four episodes just were creatively not going the direction they had hoped for. And they won't be airing.
Yeah.
Working together. They're giving it a shot.
And he's shooting himself at the microphone. Well, listen, I've had enough failed pilots. I can't make fun of anybody. You've been where I've been, Lake, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
At least I got picked up.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Better than mine.
People make pilots, and they don't get picked up.
Yeah. Dane gave one of the douchebaggiest answers ever gotten from a human being before. Which is, and again, I'm secretly jealous of all the guys that are just filled with their own douche wind. And
their ships sail by it.
Yes.
Ooh.
At quite a nice clip. He was on my show once, and I said to him, and it's probably a fucked out, boring question, but I am interested. When people are in show business or do stand-up or comedy or anything, I go, what did you want to do? Like, what do you think you would have been doing? Because, you know, a lot of guys thought they'd be doing something else when they were in the 9th or 10th grade. And so I said, Dane, if you weren't doing stand-up, what do you think you would have been doing for a career? And he said, I don't know, but I can guarantee you this. I'd be the fucking funniest guy at the company picnic.
Right.
And I was like... I didn't ask you how funny you were going to be in your hypothetical job. Jesus Christ. And by the way, can you just fucking step back for one goddamn
second? Yeah,
what
did you say back?
I just, you know, what could I say? We're on TV. Like, I was like, oh, that's good. I thought to myself, not if I worked at the company and half the other guys I know. But his answer was not what he would have done.
Yeah.
It was simply how
funny
I would be. So it was like, it was a 1-2 douchebag punch. It was, I'm not going to answer your question, number one. And number two, let's get back to how funny I am one more time.
No.
Sure, you can't just say I was into architecture.
Didn't you say when he did Crank Yankers, he also did the thing where he'd be like, I don't know where it comes from.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yes, yes. He was
can I ask a genuine
horrible.
Question? What
yes.
would you do, Adam?
I do it now.
What would you do if you were not? A comedian.
Well, I mean, human trafficking.
Okay, right.
And that was Lake Bell guesting on the Adam Carolla Show back in 2012. Very funny, very talented. Thought that was a great appearance.
She should come back on.
As most guests should. I love it.
All hey, right. It happens. Rami Malek just came on.
How fun was that? Let's get going with another clip. But first, I want to remind everybody about Madison Reed Mister.
What's that?
Look, I've been getting gray hairs since I was probably in second grade. It might be an Asian gene. I don't know what it is, but
really,
I randomly get gray hairs every once in a while, and I'm starting to age a little bit. I'm getting some salt in my pepper. You know how it goes. But luckily, there's Madison Reed Misser out there. It's a gray blending natural color for hair and beard. And what I love about it is it's a more natural look. It's not that shoe polish that you don't look human look.
Legit black that Adam Carolla always talks about that's a dead giveaway.
You don't want the dead giveaway. You want it to look natural. And that's where Madison Reed Misser comes in. And they make it so easy. You could color match right there on the website. They deliver it right to your door in this nice little box with all the tubes for your color gel. They give you the gloves. They make it so easy with instructions and everything you need. So if you're wondering, I'm thinking of getting into dyeing my hair and making it look natural, Madison Reed is the way to go. You go to MadisonReedMr.com. That's MadisonReedMr.com. And if you use the code Adam, you get 10% off plus free shipping. Madison Reed Mr.
That's a deal.
Great deal. All right, let's get going with another clip. This one features Adam Carolla Show Hall of Famer, Joel McHale.
Yeah, this is a hilarious one I just came across. I think we played part of this episode before, but not this chunk. It's Adam Carolla Show 941, also from October of 2012, about 10 days later after the last episode. Also featuring Allison Rose and Brian Bishop. It's Joel's interview, a little bit of the news, and Adam and Joel get off on a little bit of a reenactment that goes a little off the rails. Check it out.
Hey, listen, man. If you were single and stuff, it's cool, but you're making me nervous with all this racing. You got them kids, man. You gotta be careful. There's too many shitty drivers out there. I know, you guys all know what you're doing, but you're making me nervous with this racing. I want you to slow down on that. We need you, man. All right, holla.
Click the eVoice banner on AdamCarolla.com or go to www.evoice.com/Adam to get an exclusive 6-month free trial offer. eVoice, your mobile phone at work.
Thanks for the jinx, douche.
Who is that?
He's a concerned citizen who's worried about all my raisins.
Are you sure he wasn't like a reoccurring character from The Sopranos?
The Wire.
Yeah. Adam.
Yeah.
Listen.
You and this raisins, you know, you got kids, you got little ones now.
I know you're doing, but you got to get out that thing.
Well, bad news. I just got another Paul Newman car, and this one's fast. So look out.
It's
turnkey, so I'm
not over until you own every single Paul Newman car.
It is not. I was bothered. Talk about a weirdo.
Stop right there.
All right. Joel McHale in studio.
Yeah.
I saw Tower Heist last night. It was just on cable.
Oh, yeah? You watched the whole thing?
Nope. I watched 10 seconds, and Alan Alda walked into his penthouse, and he pointed at a Ferrari 250 Lusso, and he said, "That is a 63 Ferrari 250 Lusso. It was the one Steve McQueen owned and raced," which is like, it's a street car. He never raced it. It's not a race car. And then he said, "I bought it 10 years ago for $1 million. And I thought to myself, Steve McQueen's 250 Lusso sold 4 years ago for $2.7 million at an auction, and it was a burgundy color, not red.
I was bummed by that as well.
So now, did you stand up and point and scream this, or just in your brain?
I threw my glass of Mangria at the screen and screamed up to the heavens. Joel
and
McHale.
That's what stopped you with the movie. You're like, I do not believe this anymore.
I do. I'm now.
This is totally implausible.
Well, considering, just go. I swear to God, just fucking go online. Now everyone's pissed at me. But
no,
seriously, his car.
No one doesn't believe
his
you.
His 250 Lusso sold for 5 years ago. It sold for $2.7 million. So
this
just
is
say,
ridiculous.
All right, but don't say 10 years ago for $1 million.
What, are you an idiot?
And don't say you could sell for 10 times the amount today, or you wouldn't. Let's just go online and fucking. You already got to the point where you had Steve McQueen's Lusso Ferrari. Just go ahead and put the right date under it.
Okay, and another thing.
And another thing. This soup, by the way, Wednesdays, 10 o'clock on E. Joel McHale. Season 4, by the way, of a great, great show, Community. Love me some Community.
When is that on? What's the air date for that, bud?
Well, it's been delayed. It's been delayed.
Yeah.
But it's a great show.
I'll let
show.
You know if I get text the day.
It's a great show.
Thanks,
how's Chevy doing?
Oh, he's great. I'm sure you read a lot of good things about him.
All right.
It's great.
Do you want to say Chevy's Chevy?
Thank you, Bill Simmons. You know, it's just Chevy being Chevy.
It's just Chevy being
Chevy.
Well,
I think what happens is that we run out of things to talk about on talk shows, and this is a perfect thing to kind of always talk about.
He's a little nutty, right?
Well, in what sense? That when he walks in, he wants to kick my ass all the time?
Right.
I talked about that on – I do talk about it on talk shows. But, yes, there's always going to be good stories.
Oh, I saw you on Letterman talking about
that.
I was on the road watching you on Letterman.
I didn't even talk about the part where Chevy swings at me.
Really?
Well, he does it. You know, he hasn't done it lately, but he – for at least the first couple of years, it was always like, come on, boy. Come on. Then he put his fists up, and then he would say, like, hit me. This is different than when I separated his shoulder.
I heard that on Letterman too.
Yeah,
that's right.
But this one is different in that when he would come at me with the fist, he would like give me little slaps, and I'm like, he's like, "Come on, fight me!" I'm like, "We shouldn't do this."
Right.
And then
right.
I was like, "We have a day of work. I'm wearing makeup."
Sure.
And then I pull a little move on him, which I'll just show you. I won't do it to you, but where you take, if you want to get someone off you, you take their wrist. And you go like that. You just
push
it
down.
You push these two nerve endings together, and then you could drop a rhino with that. And
right.
Then he gets on the ground, and he's like, you always do your move. Why don't you fight like a man? I'm like, well, I technically won.
So do you think he has some of that thing where, like, alpha male, you know, he was the lead silverback gorilla,
right.
And now you come in, and you're young, and you're good-looking, and you're stronger than he is, so he has to try to assert himself or do whatever. Steve McQueen, 63 Ferrari, sold in the 07 for $2.3 million.
Ridiculous.
Monterey.
Speaking of
actors tonight.
And performers that race cars, James Brolin is going to be on Community this year playing my character's father.
Ooh.
And we talked about racing, because I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
For a while, he was a big-time racer as well.
Absolutely.
And he was saying how, because when he had little kids, similar to that voicemail, but he kept winning races, and so they kept kind of bumping him up to the next level of racing,
sure.
To the point where he was scared, but doing well, and he's like, I gotta stop this. Now I'm all I'm doing is racing.
And his son Josh does and did a little bit of racing.
And he's a pilot.
Himself. Brolin, and he's married to Babs, right?
He's the perfect. You should see his hair. It's unbelievable.
Oh.
It's glorious.
I like
thick
smell
or
it.
Shiny or both?
It's beautiful in silver.
He's a beautiful man.
Yes.
He
if
is?
You look at pictures of him, you can look it up there, guys in the booth. Between him and Christian Bale, when they were the same age, next to each other, they look almost identical.
Yeah. Also one of the first dudes to really rock a beard and make it work.
But
Brolin.
He was the one guy in the 70s that said, maybe him and Chris Christopherson.
Yeah. Other guys had the Dan Haggerty sort of novelty, whatever. He actually looked better with the beard. Congratulations on Ted, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you. Look up, James Brolin and / Christian Bale, and they'll
show. That is amazing hair.
Also, by the way, the website is joelmchaleonline.com.
That's kind of not doing great.
All right.
Twitter
him.
I haven't updated it in two. Yes, tweet me.
At Joel McHale. I was thinking about Joel. I was thinking about the fact that he doesn't have a swimming pool. I always laugh about that.
Bitch.
And
it's only been 4.5 years.
Mike said.
We got a blow up kiddie pool.
You do. You can have one of those.
Wow. Look at that. Isn't that amazing?
Brolin and Bale. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is insane.
It's
weird.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I never would have thought that, because I would have thought that he was a little fuller in the face, Brolin was. But boy, do they look alike.
Christian Bale looks like just when James Brolin went on that trip to England and was 35.
Wait a minute. All right. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't either.
He's English. He's 35 years old.
Oh, I see.
His father.
All right.
Come on.
Just do the sound effects, would you?
That was good.
The soup with Joel McHale. We were laughing, Joel. I don't know if I was laughing about this with you. Brian brought it up, which was back in the day when used to come in and do the bring in clips from the soup. And,
that is the greatest story I have ever heard.
I saw Joel and I said, this guy's talented. I want him in on this show every single Friday.
And Jack Silver said, I don't think so.
A little less of the McHale.
Yeah, once a month. Why every week? What's his whole thing?
Can we go to the Playboy Mansion now?
Right. So he wanted Joel McHale
Joel, I'm at the Playboy Mansion right now.
But we were laughing about, you brought up the three guys that he really didn't want in the studio very often. Those three names, by the way, bring yourself back to 2007, 2008, you know, right. In your mind when Steve McQueen's Lusa was sold. That's how we marked the time.
Right.
And
through car auction.
The three guys in 2007, 2008, Jack Silver didn't really want in the studio and sort of labeled as comedy death, at least one of them, were...
Not a fan of McHale, not a fan of Galifianakis. Wanted Galifianakis out of the studio.
Right.
And I believe Daniel Tosh was the third guy.
No.
Louis C.K.
Louis C.K. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah. And whatever happened to those three guys.
Keep Danny Bonaducci.
Keep the douche, man.
Keep the douche in there.
That's right.
No, you guys really helped put the soup on the map.
Well, we were...
It was a really great free plug that Yee was thrilled about. They were like, you don't have to pay anything? I'm like, no. And they're like, all right, just go. Great.
And listen, it was symbiotic. You brought the clips in. You worked across the street. It was awesome. And now look at you.
Yes.
A international superstar.
International. I'm huge.
I love hearing all the great stories about Joel McHale selling out all the big theaters and all that stuff. It's exciting. And I have actually... I always think about your pool, and for some, Mike said, I have your rant from the radio.
It's one of my favorite rants of all time. I still play it back to people.
I do. I haven't heard it in years.
I would love to hear it.
So I think we limited December 12, 2008, but we got it down probably to a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
No, I like the
whole
thing.
You want to do any building in this goddamn city, especially if it's up in the hills, you must either build the Hoover Dam or Hitler's bunker.
Right.
Why? Because we're an earthquake country. Because it's dangerous and we hide behind safety. We hide behind the veil of safety. Hey, just playing it safe. Hey, better safe than sorry. Hey, we're an earthquake country. My house was built in 1929. It has no reinforced concrete, no plywood, because plywood wasn't invented, no Simpson straps, no HDs, no hold downs, no all thread, no J bolts, no nothing! 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 They had some poor Irish guy, poor foundation, and they set a house on it.
He's sweating
blood.
That
was it. There was no straps and no Tico clips and no 835s and no continuous shear wall and no moments and no nothing. No nailing schedule, no inspector, no nothing. Now,
nothing! Nothing.
Now, that house was built in 1929, and you know where it is today? Right the F where it was put by all the dead people with no hold downs and no rebar and no bunkers and no straps and no nothing. Why? It's an earthquake country! It's an earthquake country! Now, what do you think the house did, you retards? Did it sprout legs and run to Montana every time there was an earthquake and then hustle back and land on its foundation? No! It sat there with no straps, no plywood, no nailing schedule, no hold downs, no all thread, no piers, no pylons, no grade beams, no retaining walls, nothing!
Wow. I didn't know how much I knew about construction until I got on a roll.
Nailing schedule.
Yeah, well, to be fair, A35s are Tico clips, so I was sort of redundant when I was like, no A35s and no Tico. I could see Allison rolling her eyes.
I was trying to hold my tongue, but it was really bothering me.
And HDs are hold down, so I did kind of double down on my HDs. Now, all thread is literally a steel pipe that is threaded. Everything is threaded. It's literally just called all thread. And moments.
Wow.
I realized I threw in moments in there.
Moments.
Do you guys know what a moment is?
I feel like we're having one.
Now, you have to now look up architectural. But a moment in architectural terms is like, let's say you said you were doing a remodel of your house and you said, I want a huge window. I want all glass in the front of the house. Well, it would have no shear strength. It would rack. It would be no good. They'd say, no, your window has to be smaller because you need panels for shear panel strength. But if you made a moment, it would be like a big square that was welded off. So you had a big frame that would not rack or turn. Those are called moments. And nailing schedule on shear walls, just where you put the nails. Like I said,
you can be flagged for not making the number of, I mean, not just the number of nails, but how you place your nails?
Sure, because you have shear wall, and then the shear wall needs to be nailed off, and so you need a nailing schedule, 6 on the seams and 12 in the field, and the inspector will come by, and if he doesn't see the nailing schedule the way it should be, then you get flagged for that.
Has there ever been a house in the hills, which is Hollywood Hills, everyone, where it's all built on, is it bedrock?
Pretty much.
Has there ever been a house that just slid down the hill or just shook apart during an earthquake?
Pretty much those ones on stilts every once in a while.
But they're on
a little difficulty, but they're on stilts. Yes, they're not on the hill. They're hanging off the hill.
So somehow at one point they were like, it's fine for you to use stilts.
Yes.
But God forbid you right. – if you have a – you can't – this window has to be this size because an obese person has to get out during a fire.
Everybody – look, my first house – up in the hills had about 86 stairs that got you from the Brian. You ever go by there? You go by the Westshire house. It's like it was like
your house now.
No, the Westshire house, the first house.
I never saw it.
It was like literally 80 something stairs from the street.
I saw pictures
to get up to the top.
Oy vey.
And when I was doing some work, I know the codes. So the inspector was like, "You got to make this bathroom door 32 inches instead of 30." And I said, 32 inches because I didn't have room for it. And it was 30 inches the whole time the house was built. And he said, it needs to be 32 by code. And I said, I know what the code is. The code is for wheelchair access because 32 inches is the minimum you need to get a wheelchair
right.
to. But between the street where the guy in the wheelchair and the special van would pull up, there's 86 stairs between. So nobody in a wheelchair is possibly getting up to this bathroom.
Are you saying they can't do something?
I'm saying they cannot do something. Yeah.
So what was his response to that?
I actually beat the guy down eventually, and he left me alone, or I just fucking bootlegged
Yeah, they
it.
Probably didn't know what to do when they were dealing with you.
But Joel wanted...
I wanted a pool.
There's the stairs. Not to my house, but it's the same kind of stairs.
How much did
house.
It suck if you had something heavy to carry from your car to the house?
Well, if you look at those stairs...
How about drunk?
Oh, well, then you have sort of weird strength and you don't remember.
It depends on the time you're what part of the drunk.
Well, that's true.
Hit.
That's true. Well, this was my famous when I told Dr. Drew I was having a listener pick me up and take me to the airport. These were the stairs I went down at 5 in the morning, waited in the rain when the listener never showed up. But
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It's bad times. So, Joel, no pool.
No pool.
Way too much.
So what we have decided to do. Is, well, we built a fireplace, which is much more fun for the kids.
Sure. Yeah, especially during the summer months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, it's exciting.
Don't splash your brother.
Mm-hmm. No, we would have had to build a retaining, a retaining wall like 60 feet high. It would have been crazy.
Right.
It would have been a horrible, we would look like we were going to be next to an office building or the back end of it or a parking garage. So.
Right.
I have a lot of problems. The only real alternative is to buy another house.
Right. So, by the way.
So can I have your house? Your house is awesome.
You're looking at a picture of what would be a moment.
Oh, thank God.
I know.
It's really well illustrated. That's probably in your house, isn't it? That's your moment.
It looks like I was having a moment there, yes.
Wasn't your house owned by Upton Sinclair? Who was it?
No.
Wasn't it owned by a famous person?
No, it was owned by a guy named Hans Conried.
Oh, yeah.
The
Bond villain?
He just did a whole bunch of voices and was a weirdo. Dr. Drew knows who he is. All right, so... Where the hell were we? No swimming pool. And the point is now City of Los Angeles, you get zero. And the contractors get zero, and the pool guy gets zero, and the pool supply guy gets zero, and everyone gets zero. Because you just went, fuck it.
Yeah, I went nothing.
That's my point.
Yes.
Little microcosm of what's going on.
Because when
in
you get
California.
The people to survey your property, they overcompensate because they're liable.
Right.
Just like we were talking about with child safety seats, where
sure.
now you have to be 65 or 75 pounds, 70 pounds before you can't, you don't have, you can't, you have to stop using the seat.
Right.
That's how heavy you have to be. That's like little ladies.
We're in a land now where everyone just gets to be a hero because they go, I'm for safety. Is that a problem? Are you against safety? You're for reckless abandon? I'm for safety. I'm for school teachers getting paid $1 zillion a year and having a pension that lasts them the rest of their life. I also want firemen to get paid $1 zillion a year and have a pension that lasts because these are heroes. I also want a child seat. Even if your kid is Fred Gwynn size, I want him in a fire seat. Why? Because I'm playing it safe. Click it or ticket, slow it down, 55 and saves lives, and everyone's a fucking hero.
Yeah.
But my thing is, who's paying for this? Who is paying for your retaining wall that you don't need that costs $150,000? Or better yet, who's moving out of state because they don't want to pay for it?
Yeah, oh, and but you, we live in all that you just said, and yet motorcycles are allowed to drive in between traffic here.
Yes.
Which is so crazy.
I know.
And I see – I have numerous times almost where you're like, I'm just going to and then you're like, your whole life will flash.
Right.
Because if you touch – you're liable, obviously.
Yeah.
But if you knock one over, it's like your life's – forget everything you own is gone.
You want to know the greatest douche move is I, because of my hypervigilance, spot these guys coming and I give them a little berth, you know.
I do too, yes.
And my friend – and you know – Kevin Hench, who I wrote The Hammer with, he did a move once where he's going down the 405. He looks in his rear view and he sees one of these guys coming. So he starts to swing out a little to give him a room. His buddy was riding a motorcycle. Two guys were on a motorcycle and they split Kevin's car. So one goes to the left and one goes to the right. Well, he's looking out his rear view and he sees a guy coming on the right and he gives him a little move. The dude on the left gives him the, whoo, what the fuck? And it's like,
we were pulling a move on you and you like, ruined it.
Listen, douche, you got to stay with your buddy.
They're like chihuahuas that bark at large dogs.
Yes.
That's
yeah, that is
like.
That is true.
Yes, but if you touch the chihuahua, then you're liable for anything that happens.
Yeah, so,
right. But hopefully the chihuahua dies. That's all I'm saying.
It's very nerve-wracking because in any other state, is there another state where you can do it? The only other place I've ever seen it is Italy.
Oh, really? I don't know. I used to ride a motorcycle and the splitting the traffic thing. At first you go, this seems hairy. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh my God, it's intoxicating. Like
the best
I am
thing.
Flying past people. It is like
you're saving a lot of time.
It's like going to Disneyland. Yes. But it's like going to Disneyland, going to the line for the Matterhorn and just
fast track.
Jogging past everybody and going right to the first one.
You should do that. Just dress in all leathers, just like you would if you were riding.
Except for you could get smashed by 5,000-pound thing that falls from the sky.
Yes.
More brazen are the bicyclists that do it.
Had these assholes taken up the whole lane on the way to work the other night. We own the road. We have just as much right to the – right? Tell that to the bumper, douche.
Tell that to the engine.
That's right. That's rolling
that
over
your legs.
Fucking crushed spine.
Now, do you ever get the move where I have had it where I've been at a stoplight and the biker comes up, realizes they don't have as much room, they have to slow down, and then they grab your car?
Yes.
And they kind of push themselves along.
Yeah, like it's hot lava and they can't put their feet down or something.
Like, what's happening? Why? And then they zip away.
I just thought about this. Remember we were talking the other day on the air. I said no more greater chasm in technology between tablets and tablets. Like there's the stone tablet that Moses brought down, very antiquated technology, and then there's the tablet that Mac makes.
Right.
I mean the Apple, whatever. You got that tablet. You got that tablet. People on bicycles are at the top of the food chain and the bottom of the food chain. Like there's the busboy Mexican riding home at night bicycle, like 3 DUIs, doesn't have a car, license suspended, and you see that guy
Where's
riding the
chain
bike
around his
banana
body.
Seat,
right? Banana seat bicycle guy cannot afford a car, and then there's the specialized $10,000.
Yeah,
it's the combination road bike, mountain bike, and the guy has a Ferrari in the garage. He just chooses to ride this because he's better than all of us. What do we got coming up, by the way, with you, Joel McHale? You must have movies coming up.
Well, the TED DVD is coming out.
Oh, my God.
And then they're going to announce a community air date hopefully soon. And last night was Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah. Guest starring in Sons of Anarchy. And also got to be doing a TED part two, right?
My character died of Lou Gehrig's disease. So
he did?
Yeah.
That's treatable.
He didn't in the cut I saw.
Yeah, he died.
Well, no, it's later as he's wrapping it up, that you know, as he's doing all the voiceover, so what happened to the characters, he says that. But it's Seth MacFarlane, so he could, I think, possibly bring me back.
Your character was slimy, so he could have faked his own death.
Yes.
Insurance scam.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
And
now Seth is hosting the freaking Oscars. Oh, my gosh. It's terrific.
I know.
Ooh, Ted prequel.
He did great on SNL. I think that was part of like their...
He's one of these guys where he's good at everything. He's good at voices. He's good at writing. He's good at singing. He's good at big band stuff. He's good at composing. And then he can also just stand up and deliver a monologue, which is like unfair because normally it's one or the other, maybe two if you're lucky. But this guy's like Alec Baldwin with Frank Sinatra's voice.
Yeah.
It's just not fucking
His
fair.
His album's good. Yeah, it's crazy. He's one of those people that just kind of was touched by God and just went, ding, you can have it all.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Should we do a little news and Joel McHale can hang out and crack wise?
The news this is with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her.
This is like going back in time.
Good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison.
How did you find Allison, Adam?
And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with zip it.
I like talking
Allison.
Over your introduction.
What if all my news was from years ago, too?
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Exhaustive search.
The what?
Exhaustive search.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But I just sparkled.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
All right. She rose to the top.
It's not a really interesting story, but all
like
right.
cream. You know what I mean?
Where did you meet?
This is a really short version. The long version is like this, but just with more words.
Oh.
Primal scream therapy.
Oh.
That's where my stepdad and my mom met.
Really?
Ray found out. Sad.
Ray, is he still as physically strong as he always has been?
I think he shouldn't try to find out. Because Ray has a very volatile combination of being physically strong and having nothing to lose. Like, so sue me, I live in an apartment. Like, good luck. Like, I mean, I'll tell you, I was just laughing about this with Cousin Sal the other day. There is that guy who was the quadriplegic amputee, a quad amputee wrestler who was this big news story about 5 years ago. And he was on Jimmy's show and made the mistake of saying to Ray when he was being pushed off stage in his wheelchair, one of his like wranglers said, like, there's not a man alive that can take this guy's two stumps that he has for arms. Now, he's got leverage because his arms aren't 8 feet long. They're stumps, like at the elbow. There's nobody alive who can hold those two stumps together.
Oops.
Ray said, I'll give it a shot. And like,
not on the air or just was...
No. That's the beauty of it. Off the air, in his street clothes, not drunk. Next, I turn the corner. There's a guy, by the way. Ray is literally wrestling with a guy in a wheelchair. On top of a guy in a wheelchair, there was Kyle Maynard, on top of a guy in a wheelchair holding his stumps as hard as he can while the guy is grunting and coming back at Ryan. It's like,
who won? Did he do it? He must.
Everyone lost. And it was like Ray was 45 and on top of a severely disabled guy with a can-do attitude.
I feel like Ray should have been an MMA fighter.
He
would have been world famous.
He was doing it for free his whole life. I think he'd get
paid.
That's
just a mistake.
The idea that this guy's in a wheelchair while Ray's on top of him trying to hold his stumps apart or together. I can't remember what the challenge was. To be fair, he probably makes this proclamation in front of adults all the time without too many guys challenging him. He just didn't know that Ray was prepared to mount him on his wheelchair and take him up on this challenge.
Does Ray have bad judgment or no judgment?
No judgment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Donald Trump has been saying for days that he has big news that will alter the course of the election.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally revealed that today, and we have a clip.
Mm. All right. Let's hear it.
You can cut out this dead air. No, it's fine.
Or don't.
Hey, we don't need sound for that either.
Or I could just tell you what he said.
Oh, why?
I think
that would save time. And that would...
I have a deal for the president, a deal that I don't believe he can refuse, and I hope he doesn't. If Barack Obama opens up and gives his college records and applications, and if he gives his passport, applications, and records, I will give to a charity of his choice, Inner City Children in Chicago, American Cancer Society, AIDS Research, anything he wants, a check immediately for $5 million.
I like that he lists what a charity of his choice means.
Yeah.
It was vague for me.
Well, I'm so confused. How does that change the election?
It doesn't. But he wants to see the college transcripts because he wants to see what Obama listed as his birthplace.
Oh, is that what he's doing?
Evidently. It's a real aha moment.
Why? Here's a couple.
This is the moment?
Isn't this insane?
Couple things. Trump made a mistake because he said a charity of his choice. He really should have just picked out one and just picked out the, whatever research fund or whatever it was and said, that's the charity. Because then that charity would be like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Seriously, dude. Like you pressure. Now your charity, you don't think it's going to you.
I think that's more. I would have picked out one. Another mistake is that he said this will change the course of the election.
Oh, he's yeah.
But then he goes, well, it's not really anything. It's a demand I have. So once you provide these things, the election.
So how does it work in terms of? I see, because I've always said this. Like we have 911 calls, and 911 calls are just they get played on the news, and you just get
right.
Demi Moore's assistant going like, she's foaming at the mouth. I think she took something. And then it just gets played on the news. And you're like, well, that seems kind of intrusive. Yeah. And then you have these things like you have records, like court records that get unsealed and opened and divorce. You know, if you're a celebrity and you get divorced, it's like, well, Harvey Levin gets those. So how does it? What is the difference between college and divorce or 911 calls? Like, why do we have weird distinctions on some things? Like, I'd prefer everything not be opened, but what stuff does get opened and how does it get opened and how do I steal your porn movie with you and your wife and throw it up on the internet and not
get
in trouble?
You don't have to steal it. You just buy it on the website.
Oh, I can get it on the website?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go to JoelMcHale.com?
It's $5.99.
Oh, okay.
But here's my theory is that no one cares about that. No one cares about his college transcripts.
Stuff came up when it's like Romney won't show his tax returns. Well, Obama won't show his college transcripts.
But how come they can't just get them? Like,
yeah, I don't know the actual legal answer, but the other things you're talking about, there's some there are
public
like court
record.
Documents, or, yeah, or public records or things like
I
that.
I know, but
whereas this is a private school records, and the same with medical records are private.
Right, but you're I don't know.
But when it's in the court,
I know I understand. Like you calling 911 is not private, and you having a whatever with your ex-wife is in the courts and not. But it seems I could make an argument for why I feel it's much more intimate to have this divorce and all the whatever airing of the dirty laundry that comes with that divorce in the court rather than whatever I did when I was 19 in college.
Mm-hmm.
When there were people around, I mean, there's somebody who knows this information
like
anyway,
report
right?
Card from your pottery class.
Oh, my
fucking Adam majored in pottery. Did you know that?
In
high school?
Ceramics.
Oh, excuse me.
Please.
It was weird how he declared a major in high school.
I thought so too.
I will.
Well, I knew I wasn't going to college, so I thought, let's get a major in. I've always wanted to declare a major. And
you should have your diploma displayed here like a doctor would.
Can't somebody, by the way, there's my actual GPA, 1.75.
Wow.
And
is that 570 days missed?
No, that is, I was 497 out of a class of 570. Oh,
that's his rank.
That's my rank. And I trust me when I tell you that out of that 570, you can lop off 50 who never showed up.
Where did you get enough grades to get the 1.7?
Also, you can back out, as I've said many times, 6 A's. I played football every fall, and every spring I played baseball, and they just gave you an A. So that's 6 semesters of A's. Mm-hmm. If you took 6 A's out of that 1.75.
Was your high school 3 years?
Yeah, it was 3 years. Yeah.
Would you go to class?
Mm-hmm. I tried.
You had to play football.
I tried, and I even applied. I wasn't one of those guys where they went like, if only he applied himself.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be that guy. Or actually, the guy I really wanted to be is
this stuff is too easy for him, so
he's
bored.
Bored.
No, it was too confusing for me.
Does that really exist, the bad student who's bored?
I would love to be that guy, but no.
I mean, most bad students are bored.
They told my brother
that. But that's about it. Really?
Oh, really?
Bored. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was really good at school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But he was bored. But he was too smart. I was too dumb. I was such a shitty student.
Well, not to toot your horn, but I will. No, this is a perfect example of where public education didn't work, because clearly you are smart, very smart. And if they were just be like, he's really smart, we should try to get him to do these things that he probably would be interested in. It seemed like that would be
would have been nice. No.
Because clearly in high school, you probably were pretty close to being able to take apart a car and put it back together, I assume.
I got more crafty as the years wore on because I had to, because that was my job and I didn't have a bunch of tools and stuff.
Were you popular in high school?
Yeah. I was like captain of the football team and class clown and a bunch of shit like that. I just went, I couldn't do school. I couldn't study. I couldn't do the grades. I couldn't spell.
Did your mom
read.
Care?
No.
She didn't care about that, but if you were to have regular peanut butter, she would have flipped out.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, instead of unsalted, whole pressed. Yeah.
Raw.
Oh. There's nothing.
But she would be like, you bastard.
You don't realize what roasting and salt does for peanuts.
There's a reason why it caught on.
Peanut butter tastes like somebody chewed up garbanzo beans and spit it into your mouth when it's not salted and it's not roasted, right? And not only that, the unsalted, the raw stuff, it doesn't spread, it rolls. So as you do it on the 14-grain bread, it just rolls. It's like cat shit going through kitty litter. It actually rolls, like, and then I'd have to hold it down like silly putty, like you're like mat it down with both hands to push it onto the bread.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's where, like, awful. Human beings do not want this.
No.
This is why it will not be.
If you spit it into a baby bird's mouth, the bird would spit it back at
right.
you, I think.
And also, look, if you said to an 11-year-old Adam Carolla, would you like to eat this one substance that tastes like radiator repair putty or this one that has a picture of Peter Pan on it and spreads magically, but if you eat this one, you're going to die 4 years earlier, I'd be like, oh, done and done. Give me the Peter Pan.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to die a happy man.
You're looking like a bonus. I get to eat it and I get to die 4 years earlier.
Awesome.
Did you go nuts after, when you got out of, when you had your own place, you just like, I'm going to eat Captain Crunch for a year.
I went nuts when I would go and babysit. Because once I got left alone in somebody's pantry.
Oh, no.
When they were out for the evening, I literally would open up cans of pie filling and dump them into a bowl and then dump like Toll House morsels and mini marshmallows in there and like Smucker's jelly and like making it in some weird high compote. I told you I roasted marshmallows. Ray and I roasted marshmallows at my neighbor's house, and while one was on fire, he stuck it to the side of my face.
Oh.
I had a friend who made homemade Fig Newtons with his friend's straightening iron. It ruined her straightening iron.
Wow. Well, yeah. It's like he's in prison.
Yes, and how many kids get together like, guys, Fig Newton time?
Homemade.
You wonder, who's? I brought the figs.
By the way, we had, that was one of the things, there was like the health food version of all the good stuff, like Fig Newtons. They had the whole grain Fig Newton, which is like, the whole part about the Fig Newton that was good was that white
shortening
on the
thing. But what kids get together? Like, hey, should we go get someone to get us beer?
No. Whole wheat Fig
Newtons.
I brought the wheat germ.
I also have a food dryer. You guys want to dry some peaches and some apricots?
So a surfer was killed yesterday by a shark.
Where?
In Surf Beach in Lompoc. Is it Lompoc or Lompoc?
I think it's Lompoc.
Lompoc.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah,
well,
by Vandenberg Air Force Base. They don't know what kind of shark it was. They suspect a great white, but they're not sure.
Mm.
He was pronounced dead when the paramedics got there.
Wait, so he was not, he was just floating? Or would he have friends on shore?
He had a friend who dragged him onto shore.
Oh, my gosh.
But then it was too late.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, though.
He was performing like CPR, I heard, when the paramedics showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the second shark attack, or second death from shark attack in Santa Barbara in 2 years.
Yeah.
But evidently, shark attack deaths are not really that common. There's like 100 or less a year, most in the water.
There's a couple things. One is, I don't want to hear the guy who survives the shark attack
they always don't blame the shark. You know, they say there's two proclamations. One, not the shark's fault. Two is, yes, I will be surfing again. I would like, Joel, you can interview me as the guy who was attacked viciously by the great white shark and survived, and I'll tell you how I would work it.
So, Brad, you lost most of your leg.
Yeah, and a lot of blood.
And it's amazing that you survived this shark attack. So,
You know who I blame?
Who do you blame?
The shark.
What?
I want him killed. I want him hunted down and killed.
The shark was just being a shark.
I'm not going to rest until I have one of his teeth around my neck and a choker. Well, like Jeff Probst. That shark.
And
by the way, if you have to kill 10 other sharks that you think maybe that shark in the process of getting to that shark,
okay,
so be it.
Look, I don't know how we're going to find your specific shark.
I need to find a Japanese guy. I feel like they know how to kill sharks.
Okay, well,
I don't want it to be. I don't want to be with a dart or tranquilizer either. I want it to be the rusty machete.
Oh.
I'm pissed at that shark.
I got him one more question.
By the way,
will you surf again?
Fuck no. Are you nuts? If you were fucking dismantled by a shark, would you go surfing again?
I guess you make a pretty good point.
Yeah. What if? Forget about surfing, Wiseacre. What if you went to the carnival and you went on that ride, the Zipper?
Yeah.
And your little cart came off and you went sailing.
Yeah.
And you got impaled on something extremely sharp and almost died. And then I fucking asked you if you'd ride the Zipper again. How fucking mad would you be?
I get what you're
saying. You understand?
Look,
are you riding the Zipper again?
This is not a story of inspiration.
Well, then I'm not surfing again, okay? Okay. As a matter of fact, I don't even like being this close to the beach.
Okay. Look, this is local news, and I am just trying to interview you, and now you're screaming at me.
Yeah, yeah. It should be called Amateur Hour. I want the shark dead. I want the shark's parents dead. I want the shark's kids dead. And no, I'm never going surfing again. You know what? I'm not even going to channel surf. How about that?
Wow.
That's right. I have the use of only one leg, and I watch 20 hours of TV, and I will not even channel surf. That's how against surfing
I
am.
You will schedule all your viewing just to avoid the word surf.
That's right.
What
I will not eat surf and turf when I go to a restaurant. I will order a lobster and a steak separately.
And then if they try to go, if they go surf and turf, you'll be like,
I'll stab them in the neck with a fork.
Wow.
Any other questions?
No, I'm pretty good.
You should get back to your little weather.
Okay.
Your AccuWeather. And by the way, just because you put Accu in front of it. No, it is not.
It's very accurate.
You put Accu in front of it doesn't mean shit to me.
If you want
to
know how cold it is in Big Bear right now,
yeah,
compared to the beaches, you need AccuWeather.
Listen, I was told, according to your AccuWeather, that it would be a warm day the day I was attacked by that shark. So I decided to head out.
You're blaming me?
And you know what?
It was
cold. No, I was attacked because of you and your inAccuWeather. Now, damn you and damn the station you're on. And by the way, you're never making it out of this market. You're never making it out of this market. You can have your teeth whitened as long as you want.
The second biggest market in the world? I don't know if you heard of a guy named Dallas Raines.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need to go anywhere.
Listen.
He's beautiful suits.
The only market you're going to make it into is John's.
Alita Loresca?
To buy some tortillas. Now, get out of my face. Everyone knows you're gay.
I wish you had been beheaded by that shark.
Everyone knows you're gay.
I wish the shark had bit in your head.
Everyone knows you're okay. He would have choked you because he didn't want AIDS.
The shark would have choked on a hair. Would have choked on your hair.
He would
be like, did an enormous
AIDS
cat
from
go
you.
Swimming
oh, hair.
And cough up a
Please,
hairball
let's talk about the
into
plugs.
My mouth?
Look at those this plugs.
Is, like, they're not
Please,
plugs.
You'll never leave this market. Never.
Why don't you
This has been
wax.
A wonderful
Why don't you wax your eyebrow?
Everyone knows you're fucking your co-anchor. Everyone knows you're fucking your co-anchor.
He's a beautiful man. Shut up.
This is about the most interesting reenactment I have ever been a part of in my life.
We can edit that down. Oh, is he still around, Heelhauser?
I think so.
Remember how we started out as a news segment? Go ahead. We have another reenactment.
Weren't we doing the news?
He died doing what he loved.
And that was Joel McHale and Adam doing some improv. They're so good together. What a rhythm they get into.
Yeah, it's crazy. Joel's secret boyfriend.
Yeah, Joel's just great, and he's great at setting Adam up too for it. Like they pair.
He's
so
up there
well.
With Rob Riggle. He's one of the best. He's also one of the coolest. After Laughs with Bald Brian, the original event, the one with Bad Religion, the one that had music. He was performing, and after he was done performing, I observed that he was actually very natural on stage. And at the time, you know, people were talking about he has his own writers. He's only touring, you know, make money off the show. And he would say so himself. But up on stage, he seemed like fully formed. So I told him as such. I was like, oh man, I watch tons of stand up. You got it. Whatever, just keep doing it. You're already there. And yeah. He was so appreciative. And then I showed him where the bathroom was at the place, even though I'd never been there before. And then we talked about local Seattle stuff. Joel McHale, yeah. Cool guy.
Seattle native and one of our first guests that we had when we started doing the Zoom COVID quarantine shows.
Very solid episode that will be featured in an upcoming Corolla Classics when everything isn't Zoom focused.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be.
That's a distance memory. It's like, remember they used to have the Zoom episodes all the time?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, when we all get back in the studio and you guys forget about this era.
As opposed to just the future Norm MacDonald episodes or whoever the lazy guest du jour is.
Oh, it is. Stop. It is a cool Zoom era, though, right? We're in the middle of an era.
You can definitely get a lot more things done that can happen in person, and it's the opportunity to branch out with your podcast, as long as people have Ethernet cables.
Completely true. All right, before we get going with the next clip, got to tell you about Geo's RV plan with Geico. All right, Geico has been a proud sponsor of Corolla Classics for a long time now. And did you know that Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies?
I do now. Yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
It's a great deal. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? The time is now. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Let's keep the ACS Hall of Fame going with our next clip. This one is with Judd Apatow back in...
from November of 2012,
yes.
About roughly 2 weeks later. Another guy, it's like, why does he come on the show so much? It's awesome that he does. I love that he does. Please keep doing it. This is a one-on-one between him and Adam, and they're talking about how whenever you're making a film, at some point, if it's a really big budget thing, somebody's going to pull the plug, and it's going to cost a bunch of money, and then you have to smooth everything out and then get everything restarted back up again. And it's a really interesting conversation. We've played part of this before. It's been played in Best Of before, but this is a nice chunk that felt fresh.
That'll scare you, too, when people think it's so unfunny that they pull the plug. And pulling the plug costs like $500,000. It's that
– right.
And that happens on every movie, not that you get the plug pulled, but there is a moment right in the middle where you do think, does this make any sense? I always think about the end. Like, does the end work? Like, will you feel like you've been through something and it's earned, or is it just going to peter out?
Right.
That's why I always shoot a lot of footage for the end, because, you know, it's hard to get at them. You know, there's only so many – ends to movies. Either everything works out, everything kind of works out, everything doesn't work out, but they learned a lesson, or it's just like a Coen Brothers life is fucking awful and that's it.
Right.
And you're always hitting one of those categories and trying to do it in a way people haven't seen a billion times.
Like, well, the catch 22 of the ending is, especially taken from a guy who made a sports movie, because when you make a sports movie, you get 1.5 options on your endings. Like, does this guy win or does that guy win? And if you go, well, if it all works out, then everyone saw it coming, and but that was so easy.
Yeah. There's no twist. That was a great original. I don't want to give it away because I think that I am promoting this movie. It's probably on Amazon, and so I'm not going to give away the ending. But that, you know, we had that with Talladega Nights. Ricky Bobby just win the race, and then at some point someone realized, oh, maybe he doesn't, you know, and there's another way to go about it. And that's the hardest part about all these movies is that little grace note at the end that you land on. You know, my favorite one is the end of Terms of Endearment, because it ends at the funeral and Deborah Winger's dead. I mean, it should be the saddest ending ever, but it works because Jack Nicholson shows her kids his pool, and he's like, you want to see my pool? And suddenly there's hope.
Yeah, I love I don't know why I was thinking about Parenthood the other day.
Yeah.
And I was trying to picture the movie where it ends, and maybe I was thinking about your movie, but where it ends with the baby, and you think the baby is the baby of the daughter, but it's the baby of the mom, as I recall.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Definitely, we thought about Parenthood when we were making this.
It had very similar notes of that. I felt notes as one of my favorite movies in terms of lots of comedy, lots of truth, lots of layers, lots of laughs coming off of tension. You know, where there's a couple of beats where the movie is comfortable enough in its own skin to go, I don't have to dance and tell jokes. We can have a serious moment or a real moment here, and then the comedy is going to pay off that much more when we have just a couple of, like, where we're secure enough with our product that we can actually just be interesting for a moment and not be funny.
Yeah, and you feel when you watch it that it really is personal to Lowell Gans and Babalu Mandel, that was their moment where they were on top of the world. They could do almost anything they wanted to do with Ron Howard, and they made something really personal that was real and funny. And that's how I felt, like, oh, I'm allowed to do this now. I probably won't be allowed to do this for long. I can slip this in and with a lot of freedom and to see what happens.
Well, what is – so then as I was watching, I was thinking, I bet Judd – I mean, so Judd has a serious side, and then the comedy could be born out of some of the pain or neuroses or whatever. But then I thought, you know, Woody Allen's done it, and other guys have done it. Bill Murray, different degrees of success. But I bet Judd has just a very straight movie in him, or that he's been thinking about or wanting to do. I mean, without. Something that would not be called a comedy.
I just think everything in life is funny. So it's hard for me to go into full drama mode because I think that our whole existence is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. What we're up against is ridiculous. What we're in denial of is ridiculous. And so it's all ultimately comedic to me.
Right.
So when I see any movie that doesn't have any humor, I think there's something wrong with those people. Because it's just, even at its worst, it's comic to me. But it's funny because we were talking about a review that came in for This Is 40, which is a positive review, but you could tell that person would rather there be less humor. Like the one criticism was that it was so funny that they wanted a little more settled down dramatic moments in it. And that is the dance of being funny, is once you're funny, you have to set a certain pace and rhythm for how funny you're going to be for an entire movie. And it is fun to be less funny sometimes. I enjoyed that in Funny People, you know, the dramatic scenes. Where I love it is I'm an executive producer on Lena Dunham's show Girls, where there is no audience. So we can do big scenes or full episodes that are not funny at all.
Right.
And it's fine. You can do that on TV now on shows like Mad Men, where they're, you know, it's all kind of funny, but they're dramas. That's the great space to do that.
Your daughters in the movie were unbelievably good. Like as I was watching, I was sort of just thinking, you know, this is a blessing and a curse. Like as a dad, you know, it's sort of like, you don't want your daughter to be a pig, but you don't want her to be Cheryl Ladd either, because you're going to have a bunch of dudes calling up at all hours. And it's like you'd like them to be like, attractive minus the huge rack and the ass that doesn't stop. You know, like you want them. You know what I'm saying?
I've had these talks with my wife many times.
You've had these talks, yeah. Like, cute.
I say to my wife, is this ass going to stop?
When is this ass ever going to stop?
We want it to.
So your daughters are so, Maude and Iris, are so compelling and so good in this movie. And then, of course, you have your wife as well. Like, I don't know what you do. Like, what happens when they just announce, look, I want to be emancipated. I want to be a scene.
I want to be like Drew Barrymore.
I'm dropping out of school. I'm hiring, you know, an attorney, and I'm moving on. Like, do you want that for them? Do you want to rein them in and go, look, this is a special occasion. Daddy directs you in a movie that he wrote, but you're not going out and starring in everything that comes out.
That's the debate that we have in the house all the time, which is when I think of a movie and want the kids to be in the movie, you know, it's partially because I don't want to meet other people's kids, and I know it'll be so much better.
It's their
with
parents.
My kids.
It's not the kids. Let's be honest.
Well, sometimes the kids, but
I like that.
But I know that if my kids, Leslie's kids, are in the movie, we're going to get a dynamic that you've never seen in a movie before. We're like a level of truth of how this family operates, and that was exciting to me. I didn't think a lot about if they were great. What I thought was, if they are awful, this is just a worldwide humiliation for my family if my kids are terrible.
Well, so, people are going to look at you as a narcissistic asshole, because yes, they're going to be like, look at this guy. Wouldn't even hire professionals. Puts his own family in there.
Well, which I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind that. I just would be more worried about them. But so I tried really hard to make them, you know, to support them so they could do a good job. And they are really hilarious. They've been watching us do this for a long time, and they're good actresses, but they're really interesting people. So I was proud of that and proud to show that off. Where we get in trouble is, well, what if someone, you know, wants Maude to be in a horror movie that shoots in Shreveport, Louisiana for 4 months? Am I going to go be a stage dad and sit on the set and, you know, and watch that? And that's not really what the purpose of this was. So our theory is, this is it. This was just
your
a one-time thing. Now, where that breaks down is my daughter suddenly getting offered something that we're jealous of.
I'm gonna tell my daughter.
Paul Thomas Anderson called Maude? What do we do? So we don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, it's funny. She's got like 90,000 Twitter followers, Maude.
Yeah.
And she's really interesting and funny. And she writes for all these internet sites like Hello Giggles. So I figure if I could teach her to do a lot of things,
mm-hmm,
you know, where she can act, but she also can write, and you know, she likes to sing and Broadway type stuff, then maybe, you know, she'll find something that she likes to do. But you don't want them needy for acclaim or needy for approval. Like, life isn't good unless I'm in a movie. That's
right.
The part that we don't want. We want this to be somewhat of an aberration, but also something that says to her, well, you have talents, work hard. Maybe you'll be able to do something.
Right. And you, as a former performer, don't pop up in this movie, I do believe. So you're sort of leading by example, which is daddy used to slay audiences.
I did not slay audiences.
At
I was not very good.
Smoker
at the Deli
on
Smoker
Tuesday nights.
At Sammy's by the Shore.
Right. But daddy slid gracefully behind the camera.
That's right. As the audience requested that.
Other muscles to flex. Yeah. So, and then what about you doing acting and some of these things?
You know, I did the only time I ever did is I did a cameo in Funny People, which I cut out, which was a funny scene where Adam was shooting a sequel to a hot dog eating competition movie. And I was the director, and I was trying to convince him to eat 5 hot dogs in one take because it was a big crane shot, and there were no edits. And I had to need to see him eat 5 hot dogs in this one shot. And then it was Adam just going, no, not going to happen.
Right.
Not going to happen. And then I say, what if we do one take? And he's like, nah, not going to happen. What if I do it in 2 pieces? And it was just me convincing him to eat 5 hot dogs. And it was pretty funny, but the movie was long and I removed it. But my stiffness was what was interesting about it, because I've never been a good actor.
You know what's a good ploy I would recommend for you in all your future endeavors? You just go talk to your AD and your, you know, the camera guys and everything, and go, look, don't roll on this one. Like, don't burn any film or digital or whatever. But put one scene for you in every, you know, whatever. You're playing the UPS guy, you're playing the director, you're playing whatever. And then you cut it out. It's never in.
Yeah.
The point is then when you get shit from whomever about cutting their shit out, you go, hey.
Yes, I cut myself out.
I cut myself out. I was the first guy cut out of my film. I know what it's like to be cut out of a film. Obviously, we're fat. We cut my scene out. So don't come complaining about your scene. You just put a little scene of you that's just waste. That's just an appendage that could be cut off like a lizard's tail.
Yeah.
that would never grow back. You just put that in every single movie. No one ever give you any shit.
That's a good idea. That is a good idea.
It was. Now I feel so, again, like so naive talking to Graham Parker the day before, going, did it cut you? Did he keep you?
Because
so much gets cut out. I didn't know he was in 10 scenes.
He was very, very good. Now, you know, here's the thing with Graham, to get back to the most important part of this.
Sure.
I knew I needed a guy who was willing to be on screen as a guy who can't sell any records, whose career highlights were behind him. So we were sitting around like, who should we get? What about the guy from XTC?
Sure.
You know, what about Joe Jackson? And we just made the list of all the people that we really like but who aren't selling a lot of records.
Oh, look sharp and I'm the man.
Nothing better, right? Nothing better.
Nothing better.
And the zillion records after that. And so we started trying to figure it out. And then a friend of mine said, look at Graham Parker's website. And he had written this essay about how he wanted to have his music in more movies, and he signed a new publishing deal. And I read it, and in the middle it said, are you reading Judd Apatow?
Wow.
And I thought, well, that is a sign. That's just a weird sign. And then I went and had lunch with him and started delicately telling him the story. And he was just so amused by the idea of the musician who can't sell any records anymore. Because you need a guy on set who's not going to be sensitive.
Sure.
When you talk about it, because it's unfair to most artists can't sell records anymore.
No, I've had that, like when I used to do the Man Show, you'd have that thing where it'd be like, yeah, no, Pauly Shore, we're really interested in having you do a reoccurring fee. Working title douchebag of the week, but we haven't, it's not, I mean, obviously there's some room for modification. Pauly, but understand, it's an homage. It's not we're not making fun of you. Like I've had that.
It's a satire. It's like Larry Sanders. We would have to have those conversations with people at the Larry Sanders Show. The funniest one was Bob Goldthwait was on the show and was hilarious. He's always been one of my favorites, and he didn't realize that in all the scenes around him, people would be shitting on him,
right,
and making fun of him because that's how the show worked. In the next scene, whatever celebrity left, the writers were going to trash him. And he said to Gary, he's like, I didn't know that you guys were gonna do that. He goes, I think it just it bothered me because so much of what you said was true. Like, it really bothered me.
He is Bob's a friend and a very sensitive guy. I think a lot of comedians.
He's so great. I mean, I love what he's done. I mean, when you talk about just shooting that next movie, I lived with Adam Sandler when Sandler shot Shakes the Clown. I mean, this was one of the biggest moments in our lives. Like, what? Sandler is making a movie with Bob Goldthwait and Tom Kenny and Robin Williams was doing a big cameo in it. And I remember me and Sandler going to Bob Goldthwait's place, and then Robin Williams came over. Now, we're just like kids, and then suddenly Robin Williams is there. And our minds are blown. We can barely speak.
Sure.
And then, he was very quiet. He wasn't in, being funny mode, but then maybe just once he said one thing, oh, look at Prince. We were like, oh my god, that was the best moment of my life. Robin Williams did the voice.
I think he's like a cockroach, which is he's either standing still or he's going 100 miles an hour. Don't see cockroaches jog, not like a cockroach is sort of making his way across the kitchen floor, but it doesn't seem to have much purpose. It's either he doesn't have a dimmer switch. I think once either to get the Baptist minister or you get nothing.
Yeah, no, but Goldthwait, that was the big moment in Sandler's career. I remember he had the one joke where they say, what are you doing? And Sandler says, nothing, just been juggling and shit. And we thought that was the first laugh Sandler ever got in a movie.
How is it that everyone has managed? I feel like this town is either half of them are friends with Robin Williams and the other half is friends with Adam Sandler. And then there's me. I feel like I'm the only guy. Who I like both of them. I respect both of them. But everyone's like, oh, I mean, me and Sandler back at NYU or Robin in San Francisco. What happened?
But you came out of where? North Hollywood?
I came out of North Hollywood. Yeah.
That might be the problem. You know, me and Sandler, we lived on Houston
Street. Could have been
part
of the problem.
We lived on Houston Street.
I grew up on Houston Street.
That's where we lived, right by the Odyssey Video.
Yeah.
And we lived there in 1990, 91. So we should have crossed. What were you doing in 90, 91?
I literally grew up on Houston Street, which is spelled OU, not Houston. It's not, or no, maybe it's spelled phonetically. I'll figure that out. It's in my book. Anyway, I grew up on Houston. My family's house is on Houston Street in North Hollywood. And I got out of North Hollywood High, which was down Magnolia Boulevard there from Odyssey. Odyssey is like a blimp hanger for porn. Yeah. And they had like that huge porn section in the back. Yeah. Yeah. It was Houston with a U, right? It was like,
still there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Odyssey. Yeah.
It pretends that it's for normal movies, but really that's just a front to have 9 billion porno movies in the
back. And so, I grew up there. I went to North Hollywood High. I got out of North Hollywood High. I started cleaning carpets, and I started digging ditches, and then I just started working construction. And I never really knew comedy was a viable, you know, way to make a living. And somewhere in the early 90s, I was living in La Crescenta with a couple of guys in a rental house. I was teaching boxing at a place called Bodies in Motion. And I was swinging a hammer.
Why didn't they pay for the movie? They got a lot of coverage.
I know Bodies in Motion got a lot of coverage. Yeah, I don't know. And by the way, if you want to know what I was doing, all you have to do is watch the movie. That's what I was doing. That guy Oswaldo was his name is Oswaldo, and me and him worked construction together.
Same guy.
Yeah, like I was like,
he was good.
You're gonna I'm gonna teach you how to act. As a matter of fact, I was like, you don't even have to act. Just be be yourself. And then I realized nobody could understand Ozzy speaking. So if you watch the movie, you'll notice that every time he says something, I go, I'll repeat it, or someone else will repeat it. Yeah. So he'll
say, good hair.
Yeah, amazing hair. Yeah.
But who told you about comedy? What was the leap to do comedy?
I just knew, I was funny, and I knew I was good building shit. And so I just was very pragmatic about the whole thing, which is I would encourage everybody to do this where you take a little inventory of yourself, but realistic inventory. Like, what are you good at? What are you not good at? What could you do and what shouldn't you do? I was a bad student. I was bad at many things, but I was very good mechanically, and I thought I had a good sense of humor. So the mechanical part, I was already doing, driving a truck, swinging a hammer and all that. And I knew that sucked. Like, that was not a bunch of money and a life that didn't involve travel or women or intrigue or anything at all.
Well, you're in La Crescenta, though.
Yeah, so I was in La fucking Centra, and it sucked. So I was like, well, I do this, and I'm good at this, and this sucks. So there's this other thing, which is comedy, which I think I can do, which, you know, has potential. I mean, who knows? I don't need to get to the top of the heap. I can just make a living. Yeah. I would have been more than happy just to write for a greeting card company or just get on some sort of animated show and just write jokes or something. And so I said, well, let's start pursuing that. So I went to the Groundlings. And then I eventually met Jimmy Kimmel, and I taught him to box because they were doing some radio stunt, and he got me on the radio, and, you know, one thing led to another. But lots of...
So you didn't start from stand-up. You started from...
I did a lot of open mics. Yeah. See, the stand-up thing is tough because when you're starting out, like yourself, like you and I, probably not put on this earth to do stand-up, but... You're funny enough that you can do stand-up, and because there's no other outlets or there were no other outlets, you end up – so it ends up being like this sport. It's kind of like you're in Mexico, and your sport is ultimate frisbee.
Yeah.
But they're like, we got a soccer ball. Yeah. And you're like, I like ultimate frisbee. And they're like, yeah, but we got a soccer ball, so play soccer.
But you're doing it now.
And you go, all right, I'll kick the ball around. And you're a good enough athlete that you could be good enough at soccer to kind of make your way onto the team. And, yeah, I do stand up now, and I do it sort of like you do your movies, minus the payday.
And that was Judd Apatow back in 2012. Talking to Adam one-on-one. Adam loves doing the one-on-ones with him. We usually go to his office to do it. He's a busy man, but we do not mind. And we always think...
Bring the mountain. Much like Albert Brooks.
That's right. Yeah, some of Adam's best interviews have been the On Location ones. And he's done Francis Ford Coppola. He's went over to him. Stone Temple Pilots.
They have a very similar, interesting thing. The Coppola one, the Albert Brooks, and some of the Judd Apatow ones. They have a very similar quality. Yeah. I don't know if it's couch-based interviewing or what. But
couch-based interviewing. Like Adam is a little bit out of his home base element, yeah. His territory. And yeah, but it's still always an excellent conversation. So love when Adam does that. All right, we have one more clip for everybody, and it's the Rotten Tomatoes game. We're bringing it back, this time with an Avengers-themed round.
Indeed. Adam Carolla Show, 1565. April 29th, 2015, aired the following day. Greg Fitzsimmons, Matt Atchity, Gina Grant, Brian Bishop. Greg's not in this portion. It's just Atchity and the gang doing Rotten Tomatoes. Check it out.
Always puts a smile on my face. All right, the category.
Sealed envelope.
Sealed envelope.
Price Waterhouse.
The category is movies from the Avengers cast.
Oh, crap.
So I'm taking the six primary Avengers that return for the sequel this week. It's already open to $200 million worldwide. It's going to make a ton more money here in the States when it opens. We will have six movies in this game instead of the regular five.
Do you think...
Bonus.
Back in the early 70s, when they were doing, you know, Deer Hunters and Dog Day Afternoons.
I just watched Deer Hunter last night. How weird is that? You brought that up.
Yeah, I don't bring it up that often.
No, first time I've ever seen it.
Dog Day Afternoons and Godfathers and movies like that, Coming Home, whatever, that he said, in 2015, it's going to be all comic books. Like, they'd be no. We've gone away from that sort of 50s, Busby Berkeley fluff, and we're getting into serious, important subject matter with guys like De Niro and all these famous and Dustin Hoffman and guys
Pacino
like this.
No.
We're going full blown, full comic books, and like, all right, for the kids, but for no.
Everybody.
No.
Well, starring TV actors and sort of characters. No. Major A-listers.
Biggest for adult. All right, the kids and the women. No! 40-year-old dudes all over this shit.
All right, February release. No one's going to see it.
Summer blockbuster.
Have you seen that documentary, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls?
Yes.
And it's about that whole scene. It's about that 70s kind of director's era scene and all those guys that were doing important movies because they were...
Coppola and all that.
Yeah, and they were influenced by the French New Wave films, and directors had all the power until Michael Cimino ruined it all with Heaven's Gate because he spent too much money. And then Spielberg and Lucas come along, and they start making these popcorn movies and change the business.
Well, it has changed, because you'd think after, you know, Raging Bull and Goodfellas, you go, well, who's going to make another movie about fucking Aquaman or something? Like, no one's going to want this fluffy shit, and now we're in. It's like somebody's trying to punish me. It really is.
That's what the world's
like. Somebody sat me down and went, what don't you like, Adam? Okay. Good. Comic books. Yeah. Nice. Star Wars.
Dragons.
Sweet. Dragons.
Vampires.
Awesome. Zombies. Great.
Singing girl
That's
group.
That's all we'll do.
And here's your gift basket with liquor and cookies.
Yes.
The good news is these aren't comic book movies. These are just the stars.
All right.
So first up, 2009 film for Robert Downey Jr. where he plays the iconic detective Sherlock Holmes.
First one was good. I guess the second one was pretty good. I don't remember. I remember the first one being kind of interesting. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is always good. He yes. just is. And the sets and the mm-hmm. dress mm-hmm. and all the garb and everything Jude Law, was so yeah. fun. And seemed to have some fun twists and things in it, but I have no idea what the
Did you see it? You
critics
saw it,
would
right?
say. Yeah, I sort of saw it on a plane mm-hmm. or something. I don't remember a lot about it. I just remember being Robert Downey Jr. is very watchable
yes.
and likable, and he did a great job, and there was some fun stuff going
on. Mark Strong's the bad guy?
Mark Strong, Rachel McAdams yeah. is in this.
I'm going to say they liked it okay, 73%.
Might be a little low. I said 69. This is a Guy Ritchie movie, right?
Yeah. It is a Guy Ritchie
69%.
Movie. I only remember people making fun of this movie. I'm going 43. 70%. God
oh!
damn it!
Right in there.
Cigarette.
Off by one.
All right. Next up, this is a movie for Chris Evans where he stars with Kim Basinger. She has been kidnapped by Jason Statham, and she uses her cell phone to call a kid, and the movie is called Cellular.
Oh, fuck.
Oh.
Did anyone see this?
No.
Sort of remember this one. What year? Sorry.
This is 2004. She's trapped in the attic because she's been kidnapped by Jason Statham, and she's
right.
got the cell phone that's almost dead. Or
right.
she's not on the cell phone. She, like, hacks the phone system and gets this random number, and it's Chris Evans, and
right.
he's trying to save her.
Okay. Let's say we don't love it. We don't remember loving it. I think I remember seeing bits and pieces of it on cable. Critics probably didn't love it, but we don't know.
I don't know.
I'm going to say 51%.
Yeah, this is a wild stat because I don't even remember this movie. A little bit, 40%.
I'm sticking with 43.
55.
Mm.
Really? That high, huh?
Very tight. Very tight.
Gina, do not just keep guessing 43.
You know,
no, please do. Please do. Right.
A movie she's never seen before, and she goes, really?
Yeah. But nobody saw this movie.
But it does. There's many
nobody
movies.
Nobody outside of the studio.
81 critics saw it.
I saw this movie.
There's many movies.
One.
This is one of the ones where definitely the critics and the audience score are pretty simpatico on this one.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
All right, next up, 2012 remake of a classic action movie. This is for Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor in The Avengers, teamed up with Jeffrey Dean Morgan and a couple other people, including Adrian Palicki, for the remake of Red Dawn.
Oh.
Did you see this?
In the fucking theater. Let me tell you, there is one good thing about being on the road, and one good thing only.
Strange pussy?
OPP.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right. There's two. I wasn't going to mention that second one.
We'll cut that out in post.
All right. There's one good thing. There's two good things, but here's one of them. You are in Fresno. It's you and Mike August. You have nothing to do the entire day because you drove in from San Francisco or Sacramento the night, that morning or whatever it is. The first show's at 8 o'clock. It's noon.
I know where you're going with
and
this.
And there's nothing fucking to do.
Mike August says strange pussy.
But eat something horrible and then go to a place and watch Red Dawn 2. That's it.
Okay.
That's the one. Sorry, the second
good thing about being
on the road. You can watch all the shitty movies you want, and there's really normally you'd feel guilty, like I should be with my kids, or I should be at home cleaning out the gutters, or doing something. But
impossible.
We're in Fresno. There's nothing to do.
But when the bar is this going to be better than sitting in my hotel room staring at the wall for 2 hours?
At the particular place that Mike chose in Fresno, yes. Put the letter M in front of where H used to be in hotel, and you'll have better understanding. So I went and saw this movie. Also, my buddy Tanner Faust, who is a professional driver, X Games driver, and a stunt driver, explained to me many years ago, because this thing sat on the shelf for a long time, that during the scenes where they're fleeing, and the kids are in the cab of the truck, and they're driving, trying to get away from the Ruskies. He is actually in the back of the car, of the truck, in a rig, driving for them.
Wow.
An especially rigged vehicle, which sounds insane and elaborate.
Yes.
What you want is the reaction of the actual teenagers that are in the cab of the Ford F-150, but they can't drive.
Right.
I mean, not professionally. Yeah. And what this guy's going to have to do is go over a bunch of lawns, crash through a bunch of picket fences, dodge an oak tree, jump back onto the street. And my buddy Tanner Faust is sitting in a roll cage in the back of the pickup truck with it rigged up, steering the car. So the guys that are in the car, that ain't acting.
Okay,
they're right. Scared shitless because this stunt driver's hauling ass over people's lawns in Detroit, and they think they're heading right at the oak tree.
Yes. Some of the driving scenes in Ronin are like that. Like the second chase scene where De Niro is driving that car, and it's actually a right-hand drive car, and they've dummied up a left-side driving wheel.
Oh.
And they've got the camera mounted on the front right side of the car, pointed at him as he's driving through the tunnel where Princess Diana had just been killed a few months before. And so that terror on De Niro's face is kind of real.
Yeah.
99%.
Now, I will let you in on this. I kept saying to Tanner when he first told me about it, where is that movie? Because I'm going to be in Fresno one day and I'm going to need to see that shit.
Let's hope that syncs up.
And he kept telling me they shelved it. They've shelved it. Yeah, they've shelved it.
Well, didn't the studio get sold or something?
Well, this was
like a Chinese company.
Well, part of what happened too is that they had to do a bunch of late reshoots because originally the bad guys were Chinese, and then they knew that they would have trouble in the Chinese market, so they changed them to North Koreans.
Never a good sign. I'm coming in.
Sully, more racist.
At 21%.
I said 25.
I'm optimistic. 39.
12.
Oh, see, Gina, this is the one where I tell you there is plenty of plenty of single digits out there when a movie is really that bad. All right. Pretty close, Brian.
I think so.
All right. Here we go.
Have a slight lead.
Now, I will say we got three more movies coming. So, Gina, you could redeem yourself.
Okay.
Wait, we have two more, right?
No, six this time.
Six.
Ooh, look
you
at
you.
I feel like I've lost my heart.
Two more.
Yes.
All right, next up, 2005 film for Scarlett Johansson, where she plays a character named Jordan 2 Delta, who is teamed up with Ewan McGregor to escape a facility where it turns out that they are clones used for organ harvesting or baby carrying. Mm-hmm. What is it?
Incubation.
Incubation. Surrogacy. Thank you. The movie is The Island.
Didn't see it?
Didn't see it either.
Gina? Michael Bay film.
Nope.
All right. Looked big and they got behind it. So critics probably a little too crazy for the critics. I'm going to say, but I didn't hear it was horrible. And they like her generally. What's not to like? 61%.
I'm real close to you. I think it was actually not that bad from what I remember. 58%.
55.
40.
Oh, damn.
Would have just stuck with 43.
All right, what'd you say, Gina, on that one?
55.
All right, Brian, what was you on?
58.
Oh, boy. It's getting tight. It's getting snuggly.
All right, next up is a 2009 film. Jeremy Renner plays a bomb technician on a team with Anthony Mackie, who also makes an appearance in Avengers 2. The movie is The Hurt Locker.
Oh.
Now, we talked about, we must, Gary, you have to figure out another one, because we talked about this one on the air once.
Oh, did we?
And I remember it was high. I'm being honest here.
Yeah, I don't recall. I remember, let's do it anyway.
Oh, you're right.
It's very high.
Yeah, vis-a-vis American Sniper.
Right. So I know that this one is, 96 or something like that, or something. I could get within 5 points of this one.
He's recusing us.
Right. I'm recusing us on this one.
Too.
But
okay.
98.
Or 98. There you go. So,
all right. We got
extra movies.
Hop to the next one.
Okay.
And Gary,
and then I have another one. I got a seventh movie in case of a tie.
Okay.
So we're all set.
All right.
Unless there's a tie, then we need another movie. Yeah. All right. Next up, 2010 film, mainly starring Leonardo DiCaprio, but Mark Ruffalo stars as his partner, U.S. Marshal, investigating a mystery on Shutter Island.
Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
I did.
I kind of liked it.
I really liked it.
I saw it late. It had been built up too much, so it was kind of a letdown for me.
It's a Martin Scorsese movie.
Yeah. I liked it a lot, but I felt like did it kind of lose a little at the end? Or I remember sort of walking out of theater going, did that happen or did that not happen?
It's one of those movies that almost can't help falling apart at the very end, but not in a major way, just in a kind of like, barely got to the finish line. It stumbled across the finish line.
I felt like there was a lot of really good foreplay that ended with a
pair of blue balls.
Yeah, lots of good in there.
The
really
setup was tremendous.
Wanting to really go, oh man, this is going to be good when I finally reveal. Yeah, okay. So because of the, I'm going to say 72%.
Oh, I said 86.
I said 80.
68.
Oh no.
That really?
That could have been the game right there. Mm.
Brian, one more time.
86. I mean 66 for me.
He will listen to you. 86. No, wait. What did you say?
I did say 86.
He said 86. Good,
yeah.
God damn.
All right. Last one. Sam Jackson plays a character named Ordell Robbie, who is a small-time arms dealer and drug dealer working with a woman named Jackie Brown.
In Jackie Brown.
Saw this in the theater.
Saw this the day it came out. Christmas Day.
Yeah.
1997.
Liked it, but the Tarantino bar is very high. So it was one of my least favorite Tarantino movies.
It's his least favorite Tarantino movie. I mean, Tarantino considers it as not his best
film. And you go, huh? And well, I'm comparing it to all the other Tarantino movies. Right? They're all nines and tens. This was 7.5 or something like that. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah. No, by no means a bad movie.
No, Tarantino's doing good at this point, but Samuel L.'s doing good, but I don't know what the critics thought of this. God damn it! I'm in the driver's seat here, so I'm going to try to play it.
You're going to hedge.
Well, you don't want to. The critics. It is the kind of thing they might like. It's got the kind of African-American thing working for it, and it's got Tarantino, and it's got some things for the critics to like. I don't think they're going to shit on this. I don't feel like this is a shit-on critic movie. I'm going to say 77%.
My theory is Tarantino was the hottest thing in Hollywood. Everyone's waiting more than 3 years for this big follow-up. I think it's overrated at 90%.
Whoa. I'm going 61.
86.
Gotcha. Oh, whoa, that's night, 4 points off!
Fuck.
Now it's a game.
Fuck. Shit.
I lost all my mojo.
That was a good lead. What'd you say it was?
I said 90.
You said 90, so you're off by 4. Well, I was off by 9. Oh, I still may have squeaked it. Gary, do the math. Thank you. Adam 50.
A handy victory.
Bald Brian. 69. Gina Grad, whatever pill you took to make you brilliant.
Gina, what happened?
It doesn't last forever. But if
it's
I
so
might say,
sad. You know what it's
can
like?
Can you say the number?
118.
Isn't that what Adam got last week? Not to be an asshole.
Well, he was trying.
I wasn't riding a 3-victory win streak.
This seems like a long time ago, doesn't
it?
It feels
kinda,
like a long
time
ago.
This reminds me of the Holmes-Ali fight where it was just sad.
Yeah.
Just sad. At a certain point where Holmes was kind of holding him up and looking at the ref going, you want to step in and you want to stop this? Are you going to stop this?
It's like old computer screens where the image gets burned into the screen. Yeah. There's still a memory of it, but it's pretty faded.
I feel like I had a Flowers for Algernon moment.
Where you got smart for a short period of time?
Yep.
All right. Outro. Rotten or fresh.
And that was Achity hosting an Avengers-themed round of the Rotten Tomatoes game.
The 45th installment.
Yeah, look at that. We are deep. We've been playing every single game since the beginning, Gio, and we're already 45 deep.
It's one of those things where people always talk about Loveline. They're like, my favorite part of Loveline is Clocks by Coldplay at the end. It's like, you mean the last 2 years of the show? All right, that's cool. But it just tells you people, it's like people's favorite SNL cast. It's like, oh, I know when you were 12, as Brian always says.
Yeah.
So people have actually been hitting me up about this. We have to address it. You guys are reusing movies from old Rotten Tomatoes games, But the movies, of course, change over time. Some not that much.
That's right.
People are like, oh no, do they know they're doing this or making a mistake? And it's like, no, it's on purpose, and it's totally fine. And we've actually brought it up on Classics before and joked about it. So some people have missed that, and like they write to me in a panic, and I just want them to know that it's okay.
That's right, and you're right, Gio, the scores do change. I remember when we did a COVID-themed round, right when the pandemic started and we had Outbreak. And Outbreak, the Rotten Tomatoes score was changing by the hour. When we were playing the game, we didn't realize it until until later. And it was kind of funny that when we found out that our screenshot of the score was different than when we looked on the website, and it just caused all these scoring weirdness because it actually affected the winner of the game. It changed. Yeah, it was changing that much. So there you go.
It's crazy.
Rotten Tomatoes. It's a living, breathing thing. All right, that'll do it for Corolla Classics. We return tomorrow with our Sunday show, so make sure to subscribe to Corolla Classics, the podcast. That's where you get it. And we will see you there. My name's Chris Luxemana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get on.